All right, we'd like to welcome everyone out to the rack tonight. If you can find your seats, we'll get started. Appreciate everyone taking the time to come down and appreciate good public attendance. My name's Kevin Albrecht. First off, we will have approval of the agenda. If not, we'll ask for a motion. Okay. Motion to approve the agenda by Kent Johnson. We have a second by Todd Huntington. How about approval of the minutes? Okay. Any discussion on the minutes?
Motion to approve.
Okay, motion to approve the minutes by Todd Huntington. Seconded by Kent Johnson. Okay, we'll go to old business and wildlife board update by Chris Wood.
So I attended the wildlife board and spoke for our RAC because Kevin was not able to attend that meeting. So I'll give you an update on what was discussed and what motions were made and what was approved. And if you remember our last RAC was about fisheries and aquatics, and so the hot topic was corn. Remember that? So they made motions on that, but there were several different items that were brought up, and so the aquatics recommendations were broken up into several different motions. There was a motion to approve a catch and kill regulation on walleye in Echo Reservoir. And that passed unanimously. Walleye were illegally introduced into Echo, and so that came to the board, and that was approved. There was also some discussion among the RACs and a proposal for strawberry for a two-day possession limit to be allowed at Strawberry Reservoir. That would match the two-day possession limit that the board approved, I think, last year statewide. And so there was a lot of discussion on that proposal. And in the end, that motion to accept the two-day possession limit on strawberry failed, 3-2. There was also discussion about Utah Lake and its tributaries. If you remember, our RAC voted to approve fishing in the tributaries, so we voted to do away with seasonal closures in the Utah Lake tributaries. The Wildlife Board agreed, and they voted 4-1 to allow fishing in the Utah Lake tributaries, but to keep it closed for walleye, which are spawning during that time. And then the remaining recommendations or the remaining proposal, including the use of corn at 8 different bodies of water throughout the state on a trial basis, was approved. That passed unanimously. So corn is starting, I believe, January 1st. Corn is you can use corn at 8 different bodies of water. There's, I think, 2 per region, and 2 of the regions share 1 or 2 of the reservoirs. So that's why there's 8. And I believe that was it.
I had to see if everyone was on their toes, and Darris and Todd were. So we do need to have a vote on the minutes and the agenda. So all in favor of the agenda? Okay. Unanimous. All in favor of the minutes? Unanimous. Thank you. And we will have a regional update.
We concluded our fall gill netting surveys in October. We gill netted Schofield, and I forgot to mention this in the regional and the update from the board meeting, but Schofield was discussed quite a bit at the board meeting, and the board agreed with what the RAC felt as well at our last RAC meeting, that the Division of Wildlife needed to take additional action at Schofield, that the current biological strategy, which we believe is working, was going to take too long to reach its results. And so we presented to the board our strategy, and they gave us a thumbs up and said, yes, please proceed in that direction. And that is that we put out a survey to the anglers and sportsmen of Utah. We got a lot of people that took that survey. And in the survey, we asked, you know, here are some options. What should we do with Schofield? How happy are you with the Schofield currently? And as you can imagine, most people said they weren't happy with Schofield, and they wanted action to occur sooner rather than later. And so we gave them an option of what different types of action can be. It could be a rotenone treatment. It could be introducing a different type of predator fish or a few different types of predator fish that would reduce the amount of chubs. And then we also asked in the survey whether they'd be willing to sit on a committee to help develop a plan for Schofield Reservoir. And so we have been reviewing those results the last 2 weeks. We're putting together a team in the next week or two, and we'll have our first meeting, we hope, before Christmas. And then we hope to meet 3 or 4 times, develop a plan together as a group. And on the group will be angler groups and citizens of Carbon County and local communities, people who own cabins near Schofield, family, people who want a family fishery, just multiple interest groups will be on this committee. And together they'll write a plan, and that plan will come to the RAC and the board next spring. So in addition to this gill netting at Schofield, which we did see a lot of chubs, they were the bigger chubs, but as we learned at the last RAC meeting, chubs can take 20 years before they die. There weren't a whole lot of little chubs, so that it was an indication that our biological strategy was working. But as I just mentioned, and as what we discussed at the last RAC meeting, citizens and sportsmen don't want to wait that long, and so there's other strategies we can implement to get that fishery in a great production and shape before 20 years from now. So we also did gill netting at Joe's Valley. Indications were that the chubs there are not, there's not very many chubs there, and that's because the larger predator fish, the tiger muskie, there's some splake there that are really big. We got one in the nets that was 27 inches and almost 9 pounds. Those larger predator fish are removing and keeping down the chub populations. We also hired a new biologist. His name is Jordan Detler. He has worked for us for the last 4 or 5 summers. He is our aquatic invasive species biologist, so he oversees and tries to prevent quagga mussels from coming onto our Utah waters. His specific area are the waters on the Manti and other parts of the region. We have a separate biologist that works in the Lake Powell area. Our habitat section has been busy. This is the busiest time of year for them. They're implementing habitat projects, everything from pinyon juniper removal projects. You can see there in the bottom right-hand corner is a bullhog. It removes pinyon and juniper trees that are encroaching upon sagebrush communities that are vital for our mule deer in the wintertime and for our elk. We're also putting in some guzzlers. We've worked with some Boy Scout groups the last few weeks. We've also trapped chuckers near Delta and relocated them in the Price area. And some of these guzzlers you see will benefit upland game. Some guzzlers will benefit a big game. And sometimes they benefit, there's multiple use, including livestock. Our outreach sections are busy too. I think it was November 3rd or 4th, whatever Saturday it was, 4th, was National Bison Day. And Jason Chaffetz, our congressman, was key in getting National Bison Day and the bison as our national mammal, that legislation passed, and part of his involvement was making sure that that legislation continued to allow us to hunt the bison. And so he came down with us on the day before National Bison Day, and we took him. Our director came down, and Bill and Morgan and some biologists took him on the Henrys, and we showed him bison up close and personal. So it was a good experience for him to see that and have him support our efforts in restoring bison. We have a Mule Deer Watch coming up on November 19th. That's this Saturday. It's been an RSVP type event. Our list is full. We have a waiting list, but there's been a strong interest in that. Every year we take some constituents up there, and they love to see the wintering mule deer that are coming down off the Book Cliffs into our Nashwash property. This year, like we've had done the last 3 or 4 years, we've released a lot of pen-raised pheasants. So with statewide, we've released 10,000 pheasants. A lot of those birds, you know, 1,000 plus, maybe 2,000 birds are coming to our southeastern part of the state. And we release them at our wildlife management areas and in our walk-in access areas. We actually have our map on our website that shows you the properties we're releasing them at. It's been a great opportunity for people to hunt pheasants again. And we get a lot of positive feedback from our constituents. They love that experience and that opportunity. So we release them every single week until the hunt's closed. And so each week there's a new batch of birds ready to be hunted. So it's been fun. And then we're currently reviewing a walk-in access property near Hiawatha that will be open for big game hunting, and renewing other applications that we have. We did have a youth pheasant hunt on October 15th, and our law enforcement group, our officers, hosted one of those events. They've also been responding to UTIP calls. I'm always amazed how busy our officers are responding to different leads and investigating different cases, and they're busy this year again as well. They'll be doing some winter range patrols at the end of this month. And then in general, they're getting positive feedback from hunters. And our officers are the ones who really are the face of our agency a lot of the times, and who talk to hunters more than anybody else. And what they're hearing is that this year's been a good mule deer hunt. And that's what we've heard statewide. And they're also getting great feedback about our pheasant hunt. We had CWD check stations in Wellington and at LaSalle Junction. Hunters who want a CWD sample taken, they can stop by our station or call our office, and we'll take a sample. And 3 to 6 weeks later, we can tell you if there's any CWD issues. We have very little CWD. I think last year on LaSalle, I think we had 2 total deer. So it's very unlikely that your deer has CWD, but it's a service that we provide our hunters, and it's something we want to monitor as well. The feedback that we're getting from our check stations, though, was that people were happy. There was more deer coming in than previous years, and the size of the deer were bigger than previous years as well. And these pictures are fresh from this year. That was at our Wellington check station. The biologists are currently, as of today and next few weeks, are doing bighorn sheep surveys. Then we'll start our capture season, where we're going to put radio or GPS collars on deer. And then we'll continue our bighorn sheep studies on the rattlesnake and 9 mile unit in December. And that's all I got. If you have any questions, I can try to answer them, or I have a bunch of biologists back here who can answer anything you have too.
On the Scopeville, was there any benefit from the toxic algae bloom that killed a bunch of chub, or was that just kind of superficial?
The opinion of our local aquatics biologists were that it was superficial. It was just, you know, it didn't make a dent really in the overall population of the chubs. Yeah.
Just wondering what steps the division is taking to ensure that the Mount Nebo fiasco doesn't happen again.
Justin, want to talk about that? Good question.
No. I'm just kidding. It's an interesting one, because we had
we had that all information from the rule, and we never put that information in the guidebook because it really impacted two people, the sportsman permit holder and the conservation permit holder. And in the past, we'd sent letters and different things like that. As we update our application guidebook, we're going to include some language to clarify that. So,
what is the division doing to make Captain Ecker whole?
That's a good question. I'm really not sure how to answer that. I haven't been involved with the investigation. That's been handed over to our law enforcement, and so the details on that entire case, not really sure. I know we certainly took it to the county attorney and to review it, and the county attorney decided there wasn't enough there for prosecution. To make a case, and so. Other than that, certainly you can still hunt all the other units in the state and those types of things. So beyond that, our bighorn biologist has been on the phone constantly with Captain Ecker and talking about rams that they've seen and areas to go. And so I think we've given a lot more assistance in that regard than we have with any of the other permit holders.
So we have a specialist, a bighorn biologist, that's a special for bighorn sheep.
Yeah, we do, at a statewide level.
And
yes.
He has the sportsman's tag holder's phone number.
Uh-huh.
Did he not have access to the governor's tag phone number? I mean, it sounds to me like he's been able to get a hold of the sportsman's tag holder, mm-hmm. and we relied on a letter.
Correct.
I believe perhaps a phone call would have been in order. If there's, especially after the outfitter contacted the division, I think there should have been perhaps some outreach there, I guess is what you want to call it.
Yeah. Certainly there's some things we can learn from this experience. I mean, we're not jumping up and down with excitement about what happened either. It's unfortunate, and there's some things that we've learned about it, and talking about better training on what the rules are and better education and those types of things. And so, you know, we can't replace what happened, certainly, yeah. But we can improve moving forward, and I think that's what we're going to try to do.
Okay.
Is that all of the questions? Okay, with that, we'll go to item number 5, elk unit management plans.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Excited to be here tonight. My name is Justin Shannon. Tonight I'm going to present the elk unit management plans. So to begin, the statewide elk management plan was approved by the Wildlife Board in December of 2015, and the unit plans were revised this summer, and local advisory committees were formed on units that were either chronically over objective, where a change in the population objective was being considered, or units that had high amounts of social conflict. And these advisory committees, they were diverse and had representation from sportsmen, landowners, livestock producers, federal agencies, and other stakeholders. These unit plans, they fall under the umbrella of the statewide management plan goals, which are to improve management of Utah's elk populations, conserve and improve elk habitat throughout the state, and enhance recreation opportunities for hunting and viewing. And the unit plans, the content that's found there, they must stay within the sideboards that are outlined in the statewide plan, and they're being proposed as seven-year plans tonight. The purpose of unit elk plans are to define management goals, objectives, and strategies, outline unit boundaries, and address issues and concerns regarding elk and their habitats. Shifting gears to population objectives, the statewide population objective is the sum of objectives contained in unit plans. In the past, we've kind of put a statewide objective for how many elk we wanted in the state, and as we were reviewing that this past year, a lot of discussion and conversation centered around that decisions are often best made at the local level with stakeholder input. And so we essentially said whatever the sum of the unit plans are, the objectives found therein, would be our statewide objective. And factors that influence these population objectives include depredation, winter range, social and biological components, range improvements, and range health. So starting with the northern region, we're recommending population increases, population objective increases on the Ogden from 800 to 2,000, on the Morgan South Ridge from 3,500 to 3,800, from East Canyon from 1,000 to 1,800, and then the Chuck Creek unit from 2,400 to 3,200 elk. If you look at their histories over the last 10 years on how those populations have done, on the x-axis you have the year, and on the y-axis you have the number of elk, and then you have the population objective there in the dotted lines with the represented colors. And so on the Ogden unit, this unit was below objective, doing really well until about 2012, where we got a really big influx of elk, a spike in our population estimate there, and we've started getting creative with some hunts there, trying to level that population off. And on the Chalk Creek, same thing, just a little earlier in 2009, really big jump in elk. We implemented antlerless elk control permits and really stabilized that, took it down a little bit, but that's one where we're certainly still over the objective. Other units in the northern region, East Canyon there in green, population is doing fine, and then about 2010, pretty good increase in elk. Got some creative with some of those strategies, reassessed how we're doing some of the antlerless permits, and it's headed down once again, but still over on elk. And then on the Morgan South Ridge, some peaks and valleys. We were high from about 2011 to 2013. The last couple of years, been able to get a lot of high success rates on the hunts, and that's dipped closer to the population objective. For the northeast region, recommending increases on the North Slope Three Corners unit from 500 to 700, the Current Creek unit on the Wasatch from 1,200 to 3,200, and the Wasatch Mountains of Inequin unit from 1,600 to 1,800. There in blue is the North Slope Three Corners unit. This one's been declining for quite some time. A lot of habitat work's been done there, and it's a unit that's co-managed with other states. These elk go back and forth, and that committee wanted to see a slight increase in the objective. The Wasatch Mountains of Inequin there in green, it's been below its objective at times. It's slightly over right now and looks to be pretty stable. The Current Creek on the Wasatch Mountains unit, that's one that really saw a big influx of elk in 2012, and we've really got after that elk unit, trying to drive it down to its population objective, and it's caused for a lot of concern and conversation from our sportsmen. It seems like the Wasatch elk unit constantly comes up in discussion, and this is why we're trying to make progress towards that objective. We're being successful, and sportsmen are frustrated as a result. So a lot of controversy there, and that was a really good committee put together to kind of work through a lot of these issues. Southeast region, no changes in these units except for the 9 Mile Range Creek, where we're recommending a slight increase from 1,600 elk to 1,800 elk for the population objective. If you look at this unit, 10 years ago, we were over 2,000 elk, and that objective was around 1,000, and somewhere in that time frame it increased, and our antlerless elk control permits, we had a year like 2010 where elk were pushed down, we got the winter, and got into the elk, and we've stayed on top of them, and we're currently below objective on the 9 Mile Range Creek unit. Central region, on the Wasatch Mountains West unit, recommending an increase from 2,600 to 3,400, and on the Okra Stansberries, recommending an increase from 900 to 1,650. There in red, the Okra Stansberries, pretty much been at its objective over the last 10 years, and the Wasatch Mountains West, stable over the last 7 years, but again over its objective. And in the southern region, we're not recommending any changes to population objectives. However, we do have what we call the Greater Plateau Complex. This is, instead of writing four different elk plans for the Monroe, Mount Dutton, and the Plateau subunits, we essentially wrote all that into one big plan. We didn't change the objective, it's still 10,400. But as we radio collared these elk and we realize that they really don't have any respect for arbitrary boundaries. We decided to manage for a range instead of an objective, and so that way if elk move from one unit to the next, you don't have to overreact or underreact with those permits. Moving on to habitat, we're interested. Monitoring is a big priority for us. Conduct range trend studies, habitat assessments, etc. Protection and maintenance. Want to minimize impacts to our important ranges, mitigate for habitat loss, and support federal agencies in managing horse populations to approve objectives. This seemed to come up in a lot of the committees, not just here locally, but throughout the state. And then improvements. Want to continue to cooperate with our various partners on habitat projects. We have a lot of momentum right now when it comes to improving habitat, our ranges. I was looking at the numbers the other day. I think since 2005, we've spent about $150 million with our partners in habitat restoration and treated over 1.25 million acres, which is just an incredible effort for ranges in the West. Highlights of the unit plans, some common threads that we found is we want to work with private landowners, livestock producers, land management agencies, tribes, sportsmen, and others to foster good relationships and manage for healthy elk habitat. That seemed to be a constant theme and a tone throughout the plans. As we want to communicate, we want to work. We want to continue to collect our data, population surveys, models, and use a variety of antlerless elk harvest strategies to manage the population objectives. This is important for us. The last statewide elk plan, we were able to provide a lot more tools to managers and biologists to get creative with hunting strategies, and this will be important moving forward. Also use antlerless harvest and other management strategies to minimize crop depredation. That was a big priority in these plans. And monitor drought conditions and increase antlerless elk permits if needed. In the northern region, just some common themes throughout the units or the regions. Want to continue to co-manage elk on the Pilot Mountains with Nevada and continue to conduct, we want to start a GPS collar study on the cache and assess feeding strategies at Hardware Ranch. In the northeast part of the state, work with the Ute tribe to increase harvest, especially in areas of high depredation or in units that are over objective. And then finally, continue to collect movement data of radio collared elk. In the southeast region, want to continue to monitor elk in CWD positive units and enhance the habitat on our summer range limited units. We've got many of those in the region. That was a priority. In the central region, communicate with the Goshoot tribe on elk management related issues. Use new tools like private lands only permits to better distribute elk on the Wasatch unit, and then use translocation as a management strategy to distribute elk and make progress towards the population objective on the Oker-Stansberry unit. And these release sites would include Muskrat Canyon and Mack Canyon. In the southern region, manage that plateau complex, that mega complex that we were talking about earlier, include all those units in one plan, and manage for population ranges. And also increase communication with the stakeholders. And then finally, if three of the five goals are met on the Southwest Desert Unit, we'd reconvene the Elk Committee to evaluate and discuss a potential population increase on that unit as well. And that's all we have. Thank you. I do want to say, too, if we have questions that are the statewide level and things like that, or regions that aren't represented, I'll take my best stab at it. And then we have staff from the Northeast region and certainly here locally if we have questions that are specific to those plans. So,
thanks, Justin. Before we start, I just want to give a quick explanation of how this process will work. So we've got a microphone there in the front. We will first go to questions from the rack, and they'll ask the divisions for any questions or clarifications. And then we will go to the public. If you have a question, please come up to the microphone in the front and state your name and then your question or a clarification. When that's done, if you would like to make a comment, there in the front when you come in, there was one of these comment cards. If you'll fill out your name, bring it to Chris or give it to a division employee, and I will call you up. We'll give 3 minutes for individuals and 5 minutes for groups, and then we will come back to the rack for questions and for a motion. So, Questions from the rack.
One question, just real quick. There are several units, especially in the northern region, where the increase in the management objective was substantial.
Yeah.
What's the reasoning for going that far all at once? Is it because there's all the elk are already there and we're just tired of trying to kill them off, or what?
Yeah, a lot of the units in the northern region are private land dominated, and the private landowners, they like the elk. They're the ones that were probably the most ardent supporters for the population increases, and so they like having them where they're at currently. And as you can see, if you remember on those slides, we were over objective in a lot of those units, and that they like to see elk in those units. So as we held these committees together, a lot of support from the major landowners in the units.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Jason, I've got a question about the LaSalle unit, just part of the report. It talks about increased decadence in sagebrush communities and slight downward trend in herbaceous communities. But then you conclude that the Forest Service and BLM assessments on current vegetation trends on the unit have not indicated overutilization of herbaceous forage by elk. Do they have a rationale or an idea of why the sagebrush communities seem to be going down?
Yeah, let's see if Guy can help with this question. Guy, you
Justin,
take a step back.
I think it has to do with the pinyon juniper encroachment will choke out grasses and forbs and reduce the amount of available vegetation for elk. And so there's that threat there, and we work with the BLM and the Forest Service to improve those habitats. Guy, I don't have anything else to add.
Well, it talks about decadence in the sagebrush community. That doesn't sound like PJ encroachment. It sounds like something going on with those communities themselves.
If I may answer that, we had this has gone on for several years with the Dolores Triangle. We had several years where the sagebrush, especially in the lower end of the triangle, was getting utilized fairly hard because of high numbers of deer that were being attracted to fields down along the river. And then once the snow came, then they'd move into the sagebrush, and then also they quit farming the fields, watering those fields. So then we had a high number of deer primarily relying on sagebrush. And so it was pretty well beat out. And then through that same period, you know, we went into some dry drought years, and the sagebrush basically just died. And so as a result of that, we reduced our objectives for both our deer and elk numbers in that area.
Thank you.
Okay.
Justin, does the division track general season elk hunters by unit that they hunt?
For
in
spike
words,
hunters?
Yeah. Do we know? And the next follow-up question is: Are the elk hunters pretty standard, or do they do a lot of moving around from one spike unit or one any bull unit to another?
We do track it. Yeah, we can track the harvest, and we ask them on these surveys the units that they've hunted. As far as how many individual units they hunt on a spike hunt or an any bull hunt, I'd have to look. I don't have any of that off the top of my head.
Not necessarily the number of units they hunt, but are the numbers pretty consistent from year to year?
On the harvest on these units?
Not the harvest, but the units that the hunters are selecting.
I'd have to go look. Yeah, I'm probably pretty ill prepared to look at something like that. And we can, Randall, do you have your computer? Is that something? Yeah, I mean, that's something we could certainly look at while we're answering other questions.
Thanks.
So just if I understand it correctly, if the Manti has 2,000 spike hunters, for instance, is that pretty stable from year to year, or do we see major fluctuations?
Right.
Okay. Can you take a stab at that, Randall?
Okay.
Thank you.
And Justin, the reason we were talking about that earlier, I was stating that I was spike hunting in the Book Cliffs this year, and the population to me had quadrupled. And spike hunters. And so we're just wondering, know, if the state is considering limiting where spike hunters choose to hunt. And they were all, everybody I talked to was from the Wasatch Front, and that Sea Bridge Road, I think, has made a fairly major change in where hunters are coming from and where they're hunting. And so, yeah, just is it affecting one unit more than another regarding the spike hunt? So
I think certainly you're going to have more pressure on one unit than another by allowing hunters to go do that. This was a question that came up in our statewide elk committee as we went through it, and the feeling there was let's let hunters be able to go to and from, especially where decreases in general season deer permits is kind of, I don't want to say diminished, but it's not that family traditional hunt as it was. It's not what it once was. And so the spike hunt, there's a lot of conversation about maintaining maximum flexibility for the any bull hunter or the spike bull hunt to go to and from. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, if you're in northern Utah and you've got a lot of private land and you want to try to harvest an any bull in your backyard or some of those areas, great. But if you want to go try the Uintas for a few days, you have that flexibility as well. So I remember it came up, and there wasn't a lot of support from that committee to go force people into a specific area.
It came up in the Range Creek unit plan that was one of the more discussed items.
Yeah.
Maybe Brad can give us some information of, you know, why he decided not to incorporate it. In my memory's fading, maybe we voted as a committee. I can't remember. To not do it, I can't remember.
But. Well, I think that's one that would have statewide implications if we limited the amount of people that could go into one unit versus the other. We could pull up that data. Are you interested in the data on the 9 Mile specifically, of how many spike hunters we've had, or any bull hunters we've had there?
Trish is more interested in the book list.
Okay.
The unit I hunt more often is 9 Mile Ranch Creek. But
yeah.
I'm just curious on whether hunters are doing a lot of shifting, or if it's pretty consistent number of hunters on the unit every year. And
Let us look real quick. We'll put something together.
When you mentioned managed horse populations, what exactly are you saying?
That's a good question. What we're talking about is providing any type of public support or social or political or any type of resources or support that federal agencies would need to help manage their horse populations to objective. And most of the concern in a lot of these unit plans is that horse populations were exceeding many of these objectives. And in fairness to the BLM, that a lot of times they felt like their hands were tied, and the process is associated with being able to get horses to objective. And so it was if we can offer support, that's what we'd like to do.
Yeah. You're just talking about education.
Yeah, and social and political support. You know, if they need a letter saying, you know, we just need to show that there's constituents that want to see populations of horses decrease, that type of stuff. So,
follow up to that, Justin, is the wording you had on your slide there, I think is better than, I guess this is the book list one. And one of the habitat objectives is to manage to minimize wild horse herds and their impacts. And I mean, that's, as a division plan, there's really nothing the division can do.
Correct.
To manage horses. So I'd suggest that you standardize the wording more like you.
Okay, is that in the memo that I put together? Or what are you reading? Is that the...
Right out of the management plan.
For the book lifts?
Book lifts.
Okay. So can you read it again one more time, Darris, for me?
It says, manage to minimize wild horse herds and their impacts.
And your point is, we don't manage horse populations, and so to have that
right.
as a strategy...
And your wording was support management actions that
okay.
that do get yeah. wild horses into compliance with...
That is the intent. I don't want to give the impression that we think we can manage horse populations, because that's not our role.
I understand that, but
okay.
I think you probably ought to standardize the wording in all these plans that talk about wild horses, so that it doesn't make it look like you guys are going to...
That's great.
Come up with new management techniques to get rid of wild horses.
That's really good feedback. Thank you.
Did
Justin, when you talk about chronic wasting, are you talking about specifically in the southeastern region, just the LaSalle unit? I mean, is that really the only spot where we've seen it?
Yeah, we've only found it in one elk. And was it the LaSalle's or the San Juan for CWD and elk? Guy? CWD and elk. Yeah, so it would just be that one.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then as far as the book cliffs, the objective is 7,500, but we're way under that. I mean, why not just switch the objective? If I think at one time Brad and I talked about this, and I mean, why not just change the objective if you don't feel like you're ever going to get to that objective?
I think we're making strides, though. I was talking to Randall Thacker, and you'll hear from him tonight. He was saying that their habitat section's done something like 30 water projects on the book cliffs. Was that this year, Randall? This year alone, and there's been a lot of habitat restoration efforts and things like that. And so it's a goal we have, and we're certainly trying to improve the habitats to get there.
No, I think it's great. It's just if you're that much under objective, it's at a point, or you're beating your head against the wall, but.
And that population just seems to be a little different than a lot of the other ones in the state. As you can see, some of these units were trying to figure out how to get enough harvest in that unit where we don't really harvest a lot of cows except for to solve some of these issues on the south side with the BLM and some depredation challenge, those types of things. We're trying to get that population to that desired outcome. So
might be the competition with the horses.
Horses aren't healthy. There are a lot of horses.
Hence, you can see why it was a common theme in a lot of the plans. So.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. That whole kind of west side of the unit is just stacked with, I mean, that's where the bison are, that's where the horses are really heavy, and yeah, there's a lot of elk, so there's a lot going on over there.
Another question on the book list plan. Under the habitat section, there's a section that says promote sustainable livestock grazing practices that minimize negative impacts to plant health and diversity, especially on summer ranges on sitla and DWR lands. And I'm assuming that's the roadless area we're talking, the bookless initiative lands, yeah. I guess, in general. Is that something, I mean, we've never had a livestock grazing program in the roadless area since the division has owned it. Is that something that new that they're going to, are they considering livestock grazing in the roadless area, or is that just a catch-all statement?
I'm not sure exactly. Randall?
It's a catch-all statement.
I take a stab at that.
Yeah, it's a catch-all statement. Just to answer your others, this is really quick. There's just 3 years of data on the spike hunters, and this is just the any weapon hunters, rifle hunters. I can look up the others for you if you'd like, just to give you. The North Book Cliffs in 2013 had 465 any bull spike hunters. In 14, we had 455, so that's only a 1,000 difference. But in 2015, we only had 380. And we don't have the harvest data yet for this year. Pardon?
This is harvest? Or
no, these are hunters. Is that what you asked, was number of hunters or harvest?
They're hunting in that unit.
That's how many of them hunted that unit during the spike hunt for at least one day. They could have hunted other units too, their spike. Spikes had multiple units in the state. But that's how many actually hunted at least one day on that unit. If the South Book Cliffs was more the question, I didn't know for sure what you were asking about. The South Books, on 2013 we had 120. In 2014 we had 99. And 2015 looks like 125. So it does vary a little, not significantly. It's not a 40% change or anything from year to year. We'd have to look
this
statewide to see if there
are some. Because it was a drastic change. I've hunted there for many years during the spike hunt, and it was drastic.
And so you saw more this year, you're saying, than last year?
About quadruple.
And this is on the North Books or the South?
What do you consider North or South? It was on the Divide Road, so.
Okay, anything from the Divide, then it'd be probably pretty much more the North. That's the North, okay. So it is. So this year, actually, we had less spike hunters by 60 hunters or 70 hunters at least than what we'd had the year before that. So it's probably more concentration in where they were at.
Right.
Necessarily more so than the actual number of hunters would be the issue that way.
We don't have this year's data.
Yeah, we don't have this year. Oh, yeah. That was last year's data.
Yeah.
So I don't have this year's. You're right. Okay. That's a good, if that's what you're referring to. You're right. So On the grazing, there's no intent to plan on the robust to change a grazing program that what's been out there.
You might want to look at that wording, because
I better double check.
If I was a livestock grazer, I'd look at that and say, I'm going to
put in for that one. We'll double check that, make sure, and see what the issue is.
Another question I had, Justin, is if my memory serves me right, we've had discussion of black bear predation on mule deer, and it was pretty much said that it's not a big issue. But yet, in every one of these elk management plans, it brings up black bear predation on elk calves, at least on units that have high populations of black bear. Are we changing our tune, or elk more susceptible than mule deer? What are we saying here?
I think what we're doing on these plans, one of the things that the managers and biologists were asked to look at was the limiting factors of elk populations. And it does come up all the time on this. And so we just wanted to include language to address potential limiting factors on it. So because to say that black bears don't take calves, they do in some cases. Now, what effect that has on the population, I think those things are things that we can debate and discuss. I'm not sure. But we are just trying to identify limiting factors in the plans. So.
Okay. Where it's less as a limiting factor, wouldn't that tag it for maybe a research project? It's hardly worth mentioning if as an impact if we aren't going to find a solution to it.
Yeah.
Is kind of my point.
Candidly, it's not a bad research project, and I think in some units where we have higher black bear populations than others, and areas that have limited aspen cover and limited summer range and some of that stuff. I think. Are you talking the book lifts in particular? Is that the one?
Well, every one of the southeast units that have bear properties, the Bajos, Los Alamos, you've mentioned black bear predation as a potential limiting factor.
Yeah, it's not a bad research project. In fact, I think it might be on those types of units that are summer range limited that we know we have high densities of black bears. It's probably something worth looking into.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any other questions from the rack? Hey,
can I make a comment real quick? Darris and others, thank you for looking at these plans so thoroughly. I think the feedback on some of this is good. I appreciate you guys taking the time to thoroughly review these. Thank you.
We'll go to questions from the audience. Please come up to the microphone in the front and state your name, and the division will be at this other microphone, and they will do their best to answer your questions. Seeing none, we will go to comments. So we'll go with Randy Quayle, followed by Bryce Pilling.
My name is Randy Quayle, representing the Utah Bowman's Association. First, I'd like to thank all the RAC members for coming out tonight and the DWR. We know it's pretty tough to make it this far sometimes. But anyway, we would concur with the recommendation from the DWR for the elk management plan that they've got in place.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. RAC members, appreciate you being here and the division for what they've done. I represent Sportsmen for Fish and Wildlife, and we support the management plan as presented. Thank you.
Thank you. Ed Muir, followed by Butch Jensen.
I'm Ed Muir. I'm a lifetime member of Timpanogos Archery Club. We're the oldest established archery club in the state of Utah since 1946. We have 120 members. We would like to concur with resolution number 5 that the Fish and Game has proposed. Thank you.
Butch Jensen, and that's the last of my comment cards. If you would like to make a comment, please bring it up.
Yeah, Butch Jensen. We're landowners on the Tavaputs and Desolation Canyon area in the 9 Mile Range Creek unit. We have private land up on the Tavaputs, and we're a permit holder in Desolation Canyon from Flat Canyon to Range Creek. So that's a pretty good portion of Desolation Canyon. But we're involved with the meeting here a month or so ago with the landowners for that unit. It was a good meeting, and I think we all agreed that we'd like to see the elk numbers go to at least the 1,800 head mark up on the ranch where we're at, and our ranch just is one of the places that's done a lot of work there. But we've done over 3,000 acres of habitat control, brush management. We've done lots of water developments. We've done control burns, getting aspen regeneration. So we've built miles and miles of wildlife-friendly let-down fences for the game, for the deer and the elk. So anyway, we agree with bumping this number to at least 1,800 head. Thank you.
Thanks, Butch. I just make the comment that you know, it's nice to be able to hear from a landowner that's worked with the division and be able to hear those comments, because many times you know, decisions affect those landowners. So I appreciate to hear that. Thank you. Any other comment cards? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to comments from the RAC. If no comments, we'll entertain motion.
Make a motion to approve the elk management plan as proposed by the division.
I second it.
Okay, thank you. Motion by Kent Johnson to approve item number 5 as presented, seconded by Tricia Heaton. All in favor? Okay, unanimous.
Aren't we being good?
Hey. All right, item number 6.
Wanted some dissension.
I know he did.
We'll help you out a little bit.
Tonight I'm going to present the Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime season dates and boundary changes for 2017. To begin, we present this slide every year on the archery muzzleloader and any weapon hunts for general season deer. All we've done is simply move them up one day to avoid a Sunday opener for these hunts. Same thing with general season elk hunt dates for the archery spike, archery any bull, any weapon and muzzleloader hunt. Same season time frame, just simply moved up one day. Moving on to statewide Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime recommendation changes. We don't have very many this cycle of recommendations, but we would like to add 3 new limited entry muzzleloader deer units. If you remember, this is something we started a couple years ago, and these are units that are managed for 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does. and they're exceeding their three-year objective. And so the ones that we'd like to add are the Mount Dutton, Ogden, and Plateau Fish Lake units. And with that, we'd like to discontinue the hunt on the following unit, the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz. This is one that this would be the first one that we're recommending to take out of this limited entry hunting opportunity on general season units. The buck to doe ratio, the 3-year average decreased this last year, and it's an interesting.
Do you know what they are on those three that you're wanting to add?
I can find out real quick. Do you want me to do that now or when? Let me do it.
Just whenever. Just curious what they're at. Well, and the one that you're taking out too.
Yeah. The one that for the Mount Dutton, the 3-year average is over 22. For the Ogden, it is almost 21, and on the Plateau Fish Lake, it is 22. And the one that we're taking out, that we're recommending, is the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz, and its average is 19. But the 3-year average on it is went from 16.4 in 2013 up to 19.9, up to 20.6. And so it's trending in a positive direction, but it's fallen off the 3-year average. The previous year in 2012, that buck-to-doe ratio was really, really high, which is why it went in as a 3-year average. So we like the trend of it, but to stick with the letter of the law, we're recommending it be discontinued. So another statewide change is we recommend adding two limited entry bull elk hunts that overlap the general season spike elk hunt in early to mid-October. And these are being recommended for the Central Mountains Manti and the Wasatch Mountains unit. Again, this is a new strategy in the statewide elk plan that calls for trying some of these mid-season hunts on some of these units. And we tried it on a few this last year, and minimal impacts with law enforcement and other challenges there. In the southern region, we recommend adding a mountain goat hunt on the Mount Dutton unit. We also recommend adding an archery pronghorn hunt on the Panguitch Lake Zion North unit. And then on the Kaparowitz West bighorn sheep unit, we'd like to recommend issuing a non-resident permit. And generally, we don't spend a lot of time or emphasis on this. It's in the RAC packet, whether it'll have a resident or non-resident permit. But this one's worth mentioning because in the past, if you drew a Kaparowitz tag as a non-resident, you could hunt the East, West, or Escalante unit. And where this, we have enough permits now in the West that it can be its standalone non-resident. And then we still have a non-resident permit for the East and Escalante. So just want to make sure there was no confusion as that went through. For the Southeast region recommendations, we recommend splitting the 9-mile Range Creek Bighorn Sheep unit into the Gray Canyon and Jet Creek units, with season dates running from November 1st to the 30th. And if you remember the last, I can't remember if it's been 2 or 3 years, last couple of years, that's been one unit spatially. And what we did is we split it in time. So like middle of November, from the first to middle of November, we had one group of hunters. And then the last part of November, we had a second group of hunters. This is a little different. We're extending it for a whole month like we had years ago, and then just splitting it spatially to force some hunters into Jack Creek.
Justin, how many tags are on the 9-mile Range Creek unit right now with both, the whole thing together?
I think there's 13 public draw 13? Permits.
Do you think that'll be, I know we're not setting tag numbers tonight, but how do you think that will break out? Split in half, or are the most of the sheep on one side or the other?
How would you best answer that, Brad? You're right. Just to clarify, we're not setting permits tonight, but what our game plan would be?
Yeah, what's the plan there? If we want to split it, we got to split it for a reason, right? We're doing it.
Typically, in the past, 80% of the sheep live in the Great Canyon part of it, but 95% of the harvest occurs down there. So we're trying to force a little bit of harvest that way. So we'll survey it here in a couple of weeks, and we'll know what to do from there for this coming year.
So probably talking 10-3, 9-4.
I don't know.
To clarify, once we get the survey results back, the way it works is we count and we see how many Class 3 and Class 4 rams we have on each unit. And so now what we do is take that number for Gray Canyon and we issue 30 to 40% of the permits for rams that we saw, if that makes sense. So if you saw 10 rams, 10 class 3 or class 4 rams in Gray Canyon, you know, the plan says issue 3 or 4 permits or recommend that. And so I think Brad raised a good point. As they go survey it, if they'll just assess that for Jack Creek, and they'll assess that for Gray Canyon. And
okay.
I'm not sure how it'll shake out compared to what we've had in the past. It's,
okay, thanks.
What are you talking about for a split?
On permits?
No, the boundary.
Oh, where would the boundary occur? Yeah. I have a slide at the end. I can show you when it and oh. remind me to pull it up. I'll show you at the end. Yeah. Okay. We also recommend altering the San Juan South Bighorn Sheep boundary to include the San Juan River. We have a lot of bighorn populations that are doing well down by Johns Canyon and some of those other areas, and wanted to include that into the San Juan South boundary. Recommend adding an archery and muzzleloader management buck hunt on the Henry Mountains. If you'll remember last spring, we brought recommendations forth, and the buck to doe ratio on the Henrys last year was 65, and the 3-year average was exceeding that 40 to 55 bucks per 100 does. And we should have recommended increases in permits, but we already had a lot of hunters in that hunt category, and so at the time we said we'd bring a recommendation to alleviate that, to help lower that buck to doe ratio. And so this is it, an archery hunt and a muzzleloader management buck hunt on the Henrys, which is a little different than what we've done in the past. And then finally, we recommend adding a pronghorn hunt to the Santa Fe Desert and 9 Mile Range Creek units, and a muzzleloader hunt to the Santa Fe North unit. Northern region, recommend discontinuing the Pilot Mountain Bighorn Sheep Hunt. This is a hunt that's turned on and off every other year because this population is co-managed with Nevada. For the central region...
That's just a one-year deal. That'll come back in next year then.
Yeah, so that population it straddles, the state line straddles the mountain range. And so we issue a permit, and that permit holder can hunt both sides of the mountain. They can hunt into Nevada. Our hunt boundary actually goes into Nevada. It's an interesting one. And then they do it the same, okay. So, and if we ever had increased populations, there's probably years that both states could have a permit. So, but the history's been kind of turning off and on every other year. For the central region, we recommend discontinuing the Stansberry Mountains Bighorn Sheep hunt. This is a population that has experienced some disease and it just hasn't been doing well as of late. In the northeast region, recommend altering the Book Cliffs Wild Horse Bench bison hunt to include the 9 Mile area, with season dates running from August 1st to January 31st. The why behind this recommendation is, over the last several years, we've had bison that have come off the Book Cliffs onto the 9 Mile unit, and we don't have a management plan for the 9 Mile unit. We don't have hunts that we've had in the past where we could just grab a pool of hunters to respond quickly, those types of things. And so by doing this, we feel like we can target pressure and communicate with these hunters to help solve this problem or alleviate. And if we had lots of bison come across and we needed to dip into a depredation hunter pool or an alternate list or something along those lines, we'd have a pool to draw from where it's already part of the unit and they know what they're putting in for. We also recommend adding a bison hunt, a cow-only one, on the Book Cliffs unit, and change the season dates on the Book Cliffs bison hunt to October 14th through December 1st. We also recommend changing season dates on the North Slope Three Corners elk hunt. Move it back a week to October 7th to 19th. This is an elk population that goes back and forth between Utah, Wyoming, and Colorado. And in working with those other states, we felt like these season dates aligned better, so we all had pressure on the elk at the same time, so we weren't moving elk back and forth. We were getting the desired harvest we need. And then finally, we recommend combining the North Slope Three Corners Bear Top and the West Daggett Bighorn Sheep units into one hunt. Last RAC meeting, there was a proposal that came out through the RACs. It was an informational only by the Utah Bowmen's Association. And at the last Wildlife Board meeting, Yuba proposed a once-in-a-lifetime archery-only hunting experience as an idea, not as an action item, but just the concept. And the idea, this slide won't do it justice because I'm combining their whole proposal into one slide, but the take-home message was hunters would exchange a once-in-a-lifetime permit for an archery-only permit with expanded season dates. And the Wildlife Board asked us to review this proposal, review the data, and provide a recommendation to the RACs moving forward. And so in reviewing the data, we put some information together that wasn't presented during that presentation. And the first is on the right for bighorn sheep. The average success rate is 96%, and the average number of days hunted is 6.4. And season lengths vary on average. For deserts, we have about a 51-day season. For Rockies, we have about a 33-day season. And the permits per hunt, on average, is 3. And so what the graph is essentially the permits per hunt on the bottom. They're grouped together. So as you can see, 84% of the hunts had 84% of the bighorn sheep hunts had between 1 and 5 permits in them. And 16% had between 6 and 10 permits. And the reason that this is important is because what Yuba was asking for was a standalone, once-in-a-lifetime hunting opportunity where it was archery only. And as we reviewed the data, we saw that 12 of the 25 bighorn sheep hunts that we have had 2 permits or fewer. So if they wanted that, they could apply for those hunts already and be the only hunter in the field with archery equipment, is the why behind this information. For mountain goats, that changes a little bit. Their success rate's still really high, 96%, days hunted, about 3.5. Really long season dates, about 50, and the permits per hunt on average is about 8. And as you can see, about 38% of our hunts have between 1 and 5 permits, but the bulk of the hunts have between 6 and 10 permits, with some hunts having between 16 and 20. For bison, we don't have hunts that have 1 or 2 or 3 permits. The bulk of these hunts have between 11 and 20 permits in them on the booklets and on the Henrys. And success rates on average about 85%. Days hunted is about 3.5. Season length is about 24 days, and permits per hunt is about 14. And then finally for moose, success rates 94%, days hunted 4. Pretty good season length at 34 days, and permits per hunt is 6. And again, 75% of those hunts have 5 permits or fewer. So with this information and looking that over and reviewing its initial proposal, our recommendation tonight is to add a 7-day extension to the end of each once-in-a-lifetime hunt that would be archery only. And the way this would work is if any hunter drew a once-in-a-lifetime permit, they wouldn't exchange a tag, they wouldn't go through any of that. They would have their season dates that are before you in the rack packet. And then if they had not harvested an animal during that time frame, they would have an additional 7 days that would be archery only. And this wouldn't be valid for hunts on Antelope Island, the Pilot Mountain CWBUs, or hunts that ended on January 31st. If multiple once-in-a-lifetime hunts occurred on the same unit for the same species, that 7-day extension would be applied to the end of the last hunt. And so you look at bison hunts on the Henrys, for instance. We have 4 of them back-to-back, and you know, if you ended your first hunt, you wouldn't start your 7-day archery extension while the other hunt is beginning. It would all be at the back end. Access to hunt areas is not guaranteed. This is important for some of those mountain goat units where we extended the season dates a couple years ago, and we worked with the Forest Service on when they generally close roads and things like that. So we want to be transparent that some access isn't going to be guaranteed, and aerial surveys may occur during these hunts. And Chris's update today said the biologists are out surveying bighorn sheep, and you know, this is the time we do it, is between November 10th and Thanksgiving. So some key dates for your consideration: the big game drawing for Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime, new dedicated hunter applicants and lifetime license holders from January 26th through March 2nd. If you're just applying for a bonus or preference point, that's extended to March 16th, and results will be posted by the end of May. And then our hunters with disabilities for general season hunt date extensions. Again, it's that standard 5 days pre or post with those hunters with disabilities. And that's all I have, thank you. And to go to that slide with the That would be the boundary for the 9 Mile Gray Canyon. So let's see where that is. What's the cutoff from North?
That looks like okay. Horse Canyon is probably the north boundary of it, and then it goes up to and down Range Creek yep. to the green.
Yeah, and then for Jet Creek, it'd be that stuff north of okay. Horse Canyon.
So, Brad, the Columbia sheep would be in the Jack Creek portion?
As long as they're up there.
Because it goes to Bruin Point. And then down to Highway 123. Anything south of Sunnyside would be in the Great Canyon portion of it.
Oh, is that?
That's right.
Is that the Horse Canyon Road, or is that?
That's the Bruin Point Road.
Okay.
So it's Range Creek all the way to the headwaters at Bruin Point, then down to Highway 123 and over to the highway.
Okay.
You ready? Justin, on the management hunts, the idea behind the management hunt is to actually kill some bucks, right? To lower the buck to doe ratio, okay. right? Did the thought come up that to maybe increase the rifle tags on that management hunt, or better yet, increase or lengthen that season? As I understand it, it's only a 5-day season, and it's a Monday through a Friday. We don't even have a weekend in there. So, I mean, could we at least throw in a weekend? I mean, if we're trying to kill the bucks, why are we adding two weapons that we have beat to death that they are less successful?
Yeah, they are less successful, there's no doubt. But on these premium limited industry hunts with archery equipment, muzzleloader equipment, they're extremely high success rates. And so this was our stab at it. This was our approach to say, let's get some hunters in there. If you look at it, I think we only have 9 archery hunters, public draw archery hunters.
I bet they love it.
Well, maybe. They wouldn't start the same day, so that's...
Right,
that's,
but yeah. They're competing. The seasons overlap. Same with the muzzleloader.
Correct, order. Yeah.
And that's nuts.
Yeah. It was just our approach, our stab at it, Todd. And so, I mean, if you guys would like to do something different with it, certainly give it a shot. So
I may make a proposal.
Sure.
So one of the things if I understand is the numbers that you have during the rifle hunt right now, yeah. from the surveys, you feel that there's too many rifle hunters to add more at that time with that.
We tried it. So we were at 30 hunters for a while, and then we went up to 35. And the feedback that Wade got and law enforcement got is, you have the hardest hunt that we offer in the state, an antler point restriction hunt, and you have several people in the same drainage going after the same buck. And so it was one of these things where we just felt like the feedback we got was there's a lot of crowding and pressure and a lot, and we want hunters to be able to look at these bucks and make sure that they're harvesting the right animals. And so that's what we're trying to do. And yeah.
And so one of the questions, talk about those 5 days. Isn't that because of the other once in lifetime hunts?
Yeah, we're trying to squeeze that in there between the end of the rifle hunt, which also has 30 hunters in it as well, but again, it's not an antler point restriction, and between the bison hunts. And so that 5-day window is kind of that where we're trying to get it there. And Todd, I didn't finish answering your question. I apologize about that. The other thing you asked is, why couldn't we just increase the permits on the normal hunts to lower that buck to doe ratio?
No, I didn't ask that. No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I think those are pretty nice.
Yeah. I misunderstood. I apologize.
Any other questions from the rack? Okay. Seeing none, the questions from the audience, please state your name.
Harry Kluke, I have two questions for you, Justin. One on the Henrys. Do you feel like if you were to add more rifle permits, that management hunt, that because of the overcrowding, success rates would actually go down? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, sorry, are you asking if we added more permits to the management hunt or to the...
Yes, okay, to the management hunt. You mentioned that it was overcrowding, the feedback you were getting. If you put more in that hunt, it seems like success could actually go down, the success rate.
It may. I'd have to look at what the success rates were when we had 20 and then 30 and then 35 and then back to 30. Guy, is that something you can pull up real quick? I want those success rates. But in theory, to answer your questions, generally on hunts, the more hunters you put in there, the lower the success rate has the potential to be.
Okay. The other question, on the late muzzleloader deer hunt that on the boulder that you're looking to do away with, you mentioned that it was trending up, and according to the letter of the management plan, you had to recommend doing away with it. What are your thoughts? Would you have heartburn if that recommendation was made to keep that because of the trend?
So this is an interesting one for us, because the strategy in the plan says explore having this type of hunt, that if you were exceeding 18 to 20 bucks, you would try it and have this limited entry experience on a general season unit. And with that, that's all it said, was to explore it. If you look at all the other language in the mule deer plan, it says manage to a 3-year buck to doe ratio while taking trend into consideration. And so that committee, this wasn't a very fleshed out idea. It was, okay, well, we like the concept. Division, you go figure out how to make it work. For us, the reason we took the recommendation out is we're trying to be transparent. And if it's not meeting that 18 to 20 bucks per 100 does, the letter of the law says to bring it down. The biologist in the southern region last night was asked how he would feel. And he says, no, it's a great unit. That herd's doing awesome. Buck to doe ratios are fine. And that region approved it to stay as is. And so no heartburn. We just wanted to manage the plan the best we could.
Justin, how about this idea? You got a break between the muzzleloader hunt and the rifle hunt of about roughly 15, 16 days. Can you do a management hunt there in that window? Still keeping, you know, your later one. I realize that'd be the more desirable one because it's later, closer. You may pick up some rut action, but could you have used that window if we're worried about stepping on the bison hunters? Which, yeah, if I was a bison hunter, you know, I don't want deer hunters running around either. Yeah. But I mean, is that a possibility?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's a window where right now the only hunt that's going on is the any weapon elk hunt, and I think they have 25 hunters a year, right, give or take, in there. So it's not very many. That's another window that would be open. Yeah. I don't know, Guy. Do you have any opinion on this? I guess I'm speaking for you. Sorry.
Come on, Guy. That was a brilliant thought I had.
the question was, the window in between the muzzleloader deer hunt and the beginning of the rifle deer hunt on the Henrys, that's a time frame that's fairly open. How would the region feel about putting a management buck hunt in place then?
Before the rifle deer hunt?
Yeah, before the rifle deer hunt. Yeah.
Yeah. Just, come on, Eric. It's just a thought.
Todd, now you can appreciate how hard it is to find these season days. It is challenging, and
having a 5-day hunt, and we got a 16-day window. We put them right after the muzzleloader, and you still got 10 days.
Yeah. Yeah.
The theory then is that after the muzzleloader hunt, all of a sudden the deer quit running around and they're docile again. By the time the rifle hunt rolls around, we can shoot them off the road or what? I mean,
yeah.
Any other questions from the rack? Okay, we will go to comments. First, Randy Quayle, followed by Bryce Pilling.
Hello again, I'm Randy Quell, Utah Bowman's Association. We agree with the DWR's proposal for the once-in-a-lifetime hunts, with exception to the archery only 7-day extension on the once-in-a-lifetime hunts. We have another memorandum we'd like to propose, and get this thing turned on. Sorry, it takes me a minute here. In September, the Utah Bowman's Association presented an informal informational proposal to the RACS and Wildlife Board concerning archery-only once-in-a-lifetime hunting opportunities. The intent of the proposal was to provide an archery-only hunting opportunity without creating new hunts, without affecting draw odds, and without disrupting the current once-in-a-lifetime hunt structure. The majority of the feedback that we received was contrary to the original intent of the proposal. We found that there are many individuals and groups that would like to see new and additional hunt opportunities created that would ultimately address the problem of point creep. Due to the nature of bow hunting, as well as the difficult season dates that we are proposing, we expect these hunts will have a low success rate. Ultimately, over time, this would allow additional opportunity, which in turn helps address issues of point creep. We encourage you to seriously consider these new recommendations, and please take action on this recommendation here tonight. Our new recommendations are 6 recommended archery-only once-in-a-lifetime hunts. The first one is a Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep hunt in the 9-mile Jack Creek area. Its hunt date would go September 9th to September 30th. It's a new hunt, archery-only, difficult-access hunt. The second is also a Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep hunt, Box Elder, Newfoundland Mountain, December 11th, December 31st, new hunt, archery-only. The next one, number 3, is Desert Bighorn Sheep in the Zion area, hunt November 11th through December 1st. New hunt, archery only. And the Kapowerwitz West Desert Bighorn Sheep hunt, November 11th, December 1st. New hunt, archery only. We're proposing also a bison hunt in Henry Mountains, September 30th, October 20th. New hunt, archery only. And a mountain goat hunt, Hiuwinas West, August 19th to September 10th. New hunt, archery only, entire unit. As we all know, archery is, we have a tendency sometimes archers to take lesser animals than what rifle hunters take. They would probably walk away from some of the animals that bow hunters would be willing to take. There's sheep out there, for example, that are getting old. They just don't have the genes or whatever to get the big size of Popinia or Boone and Crockett. Trophy animals, but archers are willing to probably take one of those. So we're getting rid of harvesting some of those animals that normally wouldn't be taken, and our hunts are quite a bit less than the rifle any weapons hunts are. And but it is giving a point creep of helping out on that, because it's spreading the points out a little bit further. And anyway, if it doesn't work out, I think it's worthy of a vote in favor of this. You know, if it doesn't work out, we just won't have don't do it again. But it gives us some more opportunities to hunt, and like I said, help to spread the points out a little bit. You know, for example, I've got 20 desert bighorn sheep points. I'm 68. I probably still won't ever get them. But with an extended one out there, I could pull my point system out of any weapon pool, put it in the archery pool, and that would open that up to somebody else, would move up in points, and it'd help that out a little bit too. So, but anyway, that's our proposal. Thank you.
Kevin, are we going to have a chance to ask questions on this after?
Bryce again with Sportsman Proficient Wildlife. We accept the plan with two exceptions. We would like to see, the first exception, we'd like to see them keep that late muzzleloader hunt on the Boulder Caparowitz, and then we don't, we approve the Yuba's plan on this once-in-a-lifetime hunt and not the divisions on the seven-day hunt. Thank you.
Ed Muir, followed by Jesse McCourt.
First of all, thank you for all your time and effort you put into this. I represent Timpanogos Archery Club. I'm a lifetime member. I'm on the board of directors. I've been a bow hunter since 1970. I have not missed a season. I am in love with the sport. I highly recommend that the board goes along with proposal number 6 with the fishing game. With the Yuba proposal, like I say, it's going to, for some of us that have hunted in the state all our life, to draw tags like that would be a dream. I concur with it. Thank you.
I'm Jesse McCourt. I represent middle-aged guys with too many kids. The youth opportunities in the state have been good, but as a dedicated hunter, I've run into a pretty major problem. 2 years ago, I had 3 of my kids were classified as youth, 17 to 12 years old. Not one of them drew a general season deer tag. Because I'd put them in just for the unit that I was a dedicated hunter in. I didn't want to, since they didn't draw the last 2 years, I've put them in for multiple choices. My dedicated hunter unit is their first choice, second choice, third choice. I haven't been able to hunt my dedicated hunter unit in 2 years now because my kids have drawn other units and I've chose to spend the time pursuing game with them. I would propose there be a mechanism put into the general season draw where a youth hunter who, and that's the other part of it, is these youth come with us on these dedicated hunter projects. They help work on these projects. I would like to see a mechanism in the general season draw that my kids can attach to my dedicated hunter number or something so that they could have the opportunity to draw the same unit that I'm a dedicated hunter in. I feel like it's a waste of my time, money, everything else to do the dedicated hunter when I can't hunt my unit because my kids are drawing elsewhere. So if something like that could be put in place, I think it would benefit a lot of youth. And also youth in general, I would like to see any youth that put in to be able to draw a tag somewhere. Because it's kind of disheartening for some of them to get excited to go and then they don't draw a tag. I've seen some of them that have gone a couple of years without a tag. So that would be my proposal. Thank you.
Eric Luke, followed by Shane Thompson.
Eric Luke, I support the proposal that the Yuba Association and the SFW has proposed as a pretty much full-time bow hunter. I very seldom hunt with a rifle or muzzleloader. The thing that I see with the division's proposal is those hunts are after those animals have been pushed for the whole season by other hunters. To me, that's not appealing. As a bow hunter, those animals are going to be so skittish and probably slim at best chance of harvesting those animals. So to me, those hunts wouldn't be very appealing. Therefore, very few people are probably going to put in for them. It's not going to help the point creep issue that we have. The Yuba proposal puts the season dates to where the bow hunters can actually have a chance at harvesting the animals. much more appealing, which I think will definitely get hunters to move from the general pool to some of these hunts, providing more opportunity. So support that proposal. Support the rest of the division's recommendations. I do support keeping the late muzzleloader hunt on the Boulder Kaparowitz, because that the trend is trending up. Seems like it would be a waste of time to do away with it this year and turn around and put it back in place next year.
Shane Thompson with the SFW and myself. I'm in support of the proposal Yuba has done as well, along with the rest of the proposal. But I will make comments on the archery once-in-a-lifetime hunts. I think this is a good start. I think it's a good way to get some of the numbers down on the draw. We're having, you know, a lot of points issues getting up there and a few tags. I mean, it isn't like we're going to open a wide open. There's just going to be a handful of tags for each one of these hunts, and it's a great opportunity. I think it would be a great thing to pursue this, and it's a good start for it. The Boulder unit, I'm not one for increasing tags, but that's a minimal, you know, they're not going to open it up wide open, so I think we should keep that opportunity for a muzzleloader hunter to go down there. I don't know how many tags there have been, but it'd be a good number. If we don't have that many, just at least one or two until it gets to that number or something to keep that open, I think it'd be all right. On your management hunts on the Henrys, going to a muzzleloader and an archery again, trying to spread that out and get some of them bucks harvested, I think it's a good opportunity to thin down some points too as well. I mean, there's bucks that are living there that nobody wants to hunt or kill. I'd like to see it go a little farther with some encroachment on some quality bucks down there. I don't know if that'll ever be possible, but we got a lot of 4 points down there that nobody wants to kill and management hunters can't kill, and they're growing every year. I don't know how we could do that as far as maybe getting some pretty qualified guys to go target some of these bucks that are not ever going to get killed by anybody, and they're taking over the gene pool. I mean, literally, it's big crab claw fronts that nobody's going to kill on a once-in-a-lifetime hunt, and they can't kill them on a management hunt. So I'd be interested in seeing you guys pursue a little bit more of a, I don't know, isolated management hunt there. I know it's tough. I appreciate all the work everybody's done. The division works their butts off trying to fit all these hunts in. It is a difficult task, but for some of these exceptional units, the Henrys is an unreal unit. So I think if we want to keep improving and making it the best hunt there is, I think we can go a little a step farther. So, I mean, I'd like to see you guys entertain that. But anyway, I'm with the SFW and the UBA as far as getting some of these opportunities for archers. It'd be a great thing. Thanks.
Thank you. With that, we'll go to questions. I think there'll probably be a few questions that the RAC will have maybe for some of those proposals. We'll go to that before we go to comments.
I'd like either Uber or SFW to maybe explain how they picked the dates they picked. It's interesting on that 9 Mile Jack Creek, they picked September, and the rest of the bighorn units, they picked rut or after rut. I'm just curious what the reasoning for it was.
Randy Quayle, Utah Bowman's Association. The one that's September, that's a new hunt, and it would be archery only hunt. And they're not crossing over on any of the other sheep hunts going on at that time. And where it is a new hunt, we would be the only ones out there. Is that helping you out with that, or?
Well, I mean, for Box Elder, Newfoundland, you pick December 11th to 31st. There won't be any rifle hunters out there then on Box Elder, Newfoundland, then either. Why didn't you pick December 11th, December 31st for 9 Mile Jackrick? Because there won't be any rifle hunters on that unit at that point.
I, as far as the dates go, I'm not certain how we decided on those. I know we're trying to keep them off of other dates.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah, the access to it and that also. So.
I was wondering, kind of the way I understood it, because of the very top access to the Jack Creek area that they picked that earlier date, that happened, I think that had a big part to play with that date.
Okay.
I'll just reiterate that in the microphone so they can pick that up. That had a lot to do with the access of the reason why they picked that September date was so that they would have access.
Now, a point of clarification on that, the archery hunters will have it September 9th to 30th, but then it's still going to have some rifle tags on it during the November 1st through the 30th season. Is that a correct assumption, or is it nothing but archery hunters are ever going to hunt Jack Creek?
That. Correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understood it, the way it was explained to me, this would be an added hunt. You'd still have the rifle hunters, but I lost my train of thought. Because of the access, and it was explained that very few of the, I can't remember the percentage rate, but most of the hunters and the sheep that were killed were in the Gray Canyon area. And so this was just, we felt it was an opportunity to provide a new hunt with some opportunity to pull some of the hunters out and not make a big impact on the resource.
Okay. But we aren't excluding rifle hunters from hunting Jack Creek during the regular rifle Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep hunt, though. Is that correct?
Yes, that's true. One of the reasons we picked that date also is it's a hard access area, and a lot of the rifle hunters don't even go back in there. There's sheep back in there that's probably never seen a human before. So we're trying to get into those areas there where the main, I believe the bighorn sheep hunt is usually over with within the first week or so, if I'm not correct on that. But it'll give us an opportunity to go back in a little further to the harder to get sheep that never is hunted and that, and it's a tough area to get into. And that's, I believe that's one of the reasons we picked those dates also. It's off the most of the, I believe it's off the rifle hunters and that, so. Think that's how it works, so how we thought about it.
Can I play devil's advocate for a second? I'm not disagreeing per se, but if access is so difficult, nobody's going there anyway, why do we need a new hunt?
Provide opportunity for more people to
the okay. Like I say, I'm not disagreeing, just so questions get answered. And then those season dates are during a rifle bull elk hunt, too. And there will be a rifle elk hunt going on that unit, just so you're aware of that.
It's like you explained before, some of those archery hunters will take a 160 ram where a rifle hunter never would shoot that ram. So we can harvest those lesser rams that'll never be more than that, instead of just letting them die of old age. Plus running people through the system, and because some people's never going to draw that once in a lifetime. Does that make sense?
Thank you. That was Bryce Pilling.
One other point of clarification. I didn't get the name of the archery club, the Temp Archery Club, Guy Mount Temp in August. My understanding is you supported the DWR recommendation, or did you support this recommendation by the other NGOs?
Pardon me, would you say that again, sir?
Did you support the DWR recommendation, or
and
did you support...
And the Yuba resolution.
And both, you supported right. both recommendations?
Right, I do.
And do you have a preference, or do you want both?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I want the Yuba, what have you, but as archers, we take fewer animals, we spend more hours in the field, it's just more opportunity that we can be there for the few people that are lucky enough to draw that tag. And like he says, it takes the numbers away from the other ones. It gives somebody else a greater opportunity to draw something.
Does it not also give you guys a better odds of drawing as well if you've got a hunt?
How many permits are you talking about?
They're new hunts.
It's a new hunt, and it's not going to be that many.
What the UBA and Temp Archery are doing is, in lieu of the extended DWR proposal of the 7-day archery only hunt at the end of that general any weapon hunt, in lieu of that, we want to go with the once in a lifetime hunts, any weapon once in a lifetime hunts on that, and that would add opportunities and take us and spread the point pool out a little bit and make it easier for other people to draw it. Also, it'd be benefit everybody for that part, for as far as point creep goes.
Does the division have any numbers on? I suppose not on whether how many people that are applying for once in a lifetime or archery hunters and would go out of the regular pool into an archery pool?
We don't know that yet until it actually happens. There might not be any. You know, I don't think that's going to happen.
I'm
personally
one. You at least.
Well, I'm not the only one. There's a lot of people that archery is their passion, and that's what they want to do. You know, they'll take the challenge of it and go out and do that. My thinking is, I've been, I'm not Chuck Gowdy or anybody like that, but hunting's been good to me, and those animals don't owe me anything, and I'm willing to go out and try to get desert bighorn sheep with my bow. If I don't get one, there's a lot more to it than that, you know, and it's the opportunity that I chose to take. I know that the success rate is probably around 25%, 35% where, with the bow, where it's probably close to 100% in Utah. It's way up there. But it's what some of us would choose to do, and I think we're going to get those pools, the hunts, there's going to be people put in for them. But like I said before, if it doesn't work, we don't have to do it again. But it is worthy of a consideration for it, I believe.
Darius, to answer your question, as far as giving us a better draw odds, you're probably right for the first year. And then when other people see that those odds are better, more people are going to pull to it.
Everybody's going to buy a bow and arrow.
that was Eric Luke.
Which one of you guys wants the bow shot?
All right. Any other questions from the rack, or move to comments? Okay.
So I'm going to get off of this for a minute. I'm going to go beat my dead horse here for a second. So I'm getting pushback on the fact that we can't have a rifle hunt in between the muzzleloader and the rifle because of pressure, or because it will make it unsatisfactory for the hunts later. Yet what is the proposal? The proposal is to overlap. That's not going to make it bad for the guys that drew the tag, the limited entry tag.
Are you talking about that spike?
I'm talking about the management hunts on the Henrys.
Okay.
Am I crazy here?
No.
There's no logic there. That doesn't make any sense.
When it seems like it's similar to that overlap on the bull elk limited entry and spike hunt, if I drew that limited entry tag and there were spike hunters, I wouldn't be very happy. So I would assume that's a similar proposal that's not very appealing. Can I move on?
Yes.
Okay. I'm an avid archer, and so I want to state that. However, I do not support this proposal, and I didn't support it at the last meeting. I just feel like, one, I heard two people, Shane and Justin, use the word squeeze. We're trying to squeeze in hunts, and yet you're talking about more squeezing. And I just don't see it. And I guess to me, looking at those numbers, you're talking about one of the sheep hunts was 51 days, yet the average hunter hunted 4 days. And it's like, if you're telling me you don't have enough days to hunt, I just don't see it. I was on a bison hunt last year. We never saw another hunter. We easily had the opportunity to hunt with a bow, to hunt with a rifle, to hunt whatever weapon we wanted to use. It's called any weapon. And we just chose to use a rifle. We could have walked up and used the bow. It didn't matter. I feel like a hardcore hunter will have success with whatever weapon they choose to use. We're giving ample opportunity. And looking honestly at the average hunter isn't hunting that hard, to be honest. I see it all the time. We're giving opportunity. You just need to hunt harder. And that includes archery. I chose to use a landowner tag this year and hunt with a bow. Was I successful? No, but I choose to do it because of what I experience, which is I'm closer to animals. You know, there's a lot of things that come with archery. Success rate's low, but that doesn't mean you had a hunt that wasn't spectacular. I don't think we need to add more days and to squeeze those calendars anymore. I just don't see it. That's my opinion.
Is that rude?
Nope. Tricia, can I ask you about what about the division's proposal of the 7-day extension? No on that either?
I say no on that either.
Okay.
I just feel like, and again, I go back to what I said in the earlier meeting about this. So we give archers more, then eventually muzzleloaders more, which they already got a bunch this year, and then eventually, you know, I mean, it's like, so where do we stop? Everybody's just in the sandbox pitching a fit, basically.
So I've got a comment on that. And when the first proposal came last time, I was opposed to it. And for the reason why I feel like more than ever now that we need to be united as sportsmen. When we went to I talked about being at the wildlife board meeting with a lion hunting, and we need to be together. But tonight I think my views change a little bit in the fact that some of the gentlemen talked about this proposal, and that they said that there's areas that receive very few hunters. In fact, there's some of those sheep that maybe haven't seen hunters. My thought is if they draw that tag with the same point pool as anyone else, they go hunt those areas, they're going to have very good success on those sheep, and they can do that now. But the difference in the proposal is they're saying that archers should have a better they should have better point odds than the other hunters. And I think that separation is separating themselves from others. That's going to separate us as hunters. The division's proposal won't do that. Even though I'm not huge on either idea. I think that the division's proposal will not split us as hunters. And it doesn't give preference to preference points of one or the other. So I would say that that's definitely better than the other.
You stole my comment. Thank you. Now I don't have to say it. One thing that might be explored is, you know, if a division wants to add add a few days and give archers extra, it might be to their benefit to put it on the front end of the hunt. I know some of the archery elk hunts were that way, the limited entry bull elk hunts before they went to an archery hunts like in Book Cliffs and that years ago, that way where you could go in and declare the division you wanted to hunt early, and you could get a certificate of registration where you could hunt, I think it was 10 days early, wasn't it, Darris, years ago?
Yeah.
With archery equipment only.
I just don't think there's any room to put any days
there may
on
not
the front
be
end
any
of any of these
to
seasons
do
anymore.
So, but I, you know, I agree with Kevin with his comment in that doing this, if it were doable and it happened, it would upset rifle and muzzleloader hunters. Not that I would agree with them being upset over it, but there's a certain degree of them that would be upset, and I don't necessarily disagree with the proposal. And then, you know, this is something where the biologists are going to have to dig into it too and look at numbers on the units, because you're asking to add tags, and that opens a whole other can of worms that the division is going to have to dig into as well with the biologists. I don't know what that would be. Has anybody, Justin, have you thought about that, or have you read this before? Do you know anything? What the division thinks about adding permits on once-in-a-lifetime units?
Yeah, so that's come up before, just why don't we just add tags? And as was mentioned earlier, the way it works is we have these management plans that have sideboards as to how many permits we'd issue. So for bighorn sheep, we do the survey, see what's available, class 3, class 4 rams, and issue permits there. With this, whether this proposal passes or not, we wouldn't add tags above and beyond what the management plans allow for. We wouldn't recommend that. And
so it would just come out of the pool of tags if you did.
Just cutting the pie a different way.
And you line them up a different way.
Yeah.
Okay.
Before you leave, Justin.
Sure.
The Boulder Mountain limited entry muzzleloader.
Yeah.
That you division's recommended to delete from it. Is it because of the management plans, and that you feel like probably next year you'll be back putting it back in, but because the management plan says we're going to cut it out, we have to recommend that?
We struggled with this one, candidly, because if you remember whether we should hunt deer in November with a muzzleloader 2 years ago, it was pretty controversial. I mean, Kevin, you were on that committee. Do you want to speak to? I mean, the room was split, right? Do you remember how that went? And in fact, we had to hold another meeting and bring the committee members back because it was such a new idea. I know we've done it in the past, but it was strong emotions and strong feelings. And so, with that, if we have a unit that fell under 20, I wasn't going to be the one to come through and say, "Well, we're just going to ignore that," because I know there's a lot of passion behind whether we should be doing it or not. If the RAC approves for it, we're fine with it. To go forward, we just want to be transparent, let everybody know that it fell below, but the trend's doing well, and however the RAC decides to go, we'll support. Does that help you, Darris? It's not one we'd fall on our sword on, I guess.
Yeah, I think there's management plans and then there's common sense.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to figure out where this is going to lay.
Yeah. You mean sometimes those don't match?
Yeah. Quite yeah. Often.
You, based on the feedback we've got from the other RACs and looking at the trend data and having the biologist speak to it last night, common sense is a good idea.
So. Well, the way I look at this sometimes, I mean, these guys have definitely done a lot of work in figuring this out, probably with a lot of people involved. But I do, as the gentleman stated before, if they do have some success, that's going to get flooded, and it's going to diminish their opportunities anyway. But of these six new ones, is there like just one or two that you'd be happy with instead of like six of them?
Ask that again.
Is there one of the six or two of the six that you'd be happy with, or is it all or none?
No, it's not all or none. We would be happy with maybe the four sheep tags or, you know, whatever. We'll take whatever you want to give us. We're just trying to open up opportunities and spread the point systems around a little bit to make easy for other people to get it. You know, there's going to be people that's never going to draw out for those once-in-a-lifetime tags the way it's going. We always talk about, hear people talking about tweaking it or changing things a little bit, but we never do anything about it. And this is an opportunity to do that, and you know, and let's see what happens with it.
Say your name.
Eric Luke, you mentioned adding tags to the regular hunts. One problem with that is the high success rate of those general hunts. Now, even though, you know, if I draw, I may choose to hunt with a bow, but if someone else draws it, they could choose to hunt with a rifle, and that high success rate kind of defeats the purpose of what we're doing. These hunts are in difficult areas. Low success rate, obviously, with archery. So we feel like we're providing an opportunity to those who are willing to take that risk. I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime hunt. You got to be pretty dedicated to give up that opportunity on such a high-risk hunt. But it provides an opportunity with a very low impact to the resource.
I'm not going to be liked very well, but I just feel like by doing this, we're saying that one group of hunters is better than the other, because you got a pool of hunters that have 20 points, but we're saying that one group is better because they use this weapon so they can draw it with less points. I just don't think that's right.
I think that's the way a lot of people perceive it, for good or bad or otherwise. Whether you agree with it or not, a lot of people will have that perception. I do like the division's proposal with splitting the 9 mile into two units and having back to a 30-day hunt with the sheep. I mean, that's kind of off topic of this, but it's a comment. There was, and I've talked to quite a few people, and I've had a couple of friends with tags, and the shorter hunt made it difficult, especially for those that drew the first one. And I've told people that I talk to and correspond with and trying to get hunters to go there, I've told them apply for the late hunt if it's going to stay that way, because it's a better time to hunt. So I like the division's proposal with that. I really do. I think it's a good idea to split it in half, and that accomplishes the goal they set out with splitting the hunt in the first place, but it gives the most opportunity to those that draw. I like it.
So as we've heard the comments, I've tried to write down some of those that I feel like would be better to split out and have individual discussion. One of those I have written is the limited entry Boulder Caparowitz.
The muzzleloader one?
Yeah, the muzzleloader. The DWR archery proposal, and also the Yuba proposal. And then the management buck hunt on the Henrys are all items I think we ought to discuss separately. Is there any others that you feel, or do you think the rest of the stuff could be as one proposal?
Kevin, I'd like to suggest that the youth hunter, dedicated hunter dilemma that Mr. McCourt brought up be put on an action log for the Wildlife Board to direct the division to look into a solution.
I appreciate you bringing that up, and I did want to speak to that. I appreciated you bringing that up. One thought I had is, I've been in that same boat with my children, and one of the things that I've done is I put them in for the dedicated hunter tag to be able to have them hunt the same unit as me. I'm in a position that paying those increased fees, I was able to do that. But maybe one solution is, you know, you mentioned your kids are going with you now and helping on those projects. Maybe a simple solution to that would make the fee price for those youth less, so that they could, that would be a way that they could hunt where their parents are hunting, but not, but maybe be an easy solution to what he's talking about. But I agree. I think an action log would be a good thing to ask the division to do on that. So.
I make a motion that we ask the Wildlife Board to consider putting the youth hunter, dedicated hunter issue on an action log for the division to look at a solution to it.
I'll second that.
Okay. So we got a motion by Darris Jones to have the youth hunter, the dedicated hunter, as an action log item, seconded by Todd Huntington. All in favor? Unanimous. All right.
You're entertaining motions on everything now?
Yeah, and I'd say let's go through those separate ones.
Okay. I have a motion on the Henry Mountains.
Okay.
I'd like a motion that we add 2 days on the muzzleloader management hunt. Front end or back end, doesn't matter, just to accommodate a weekend for those hunters. And
you mean the rifle hunt, the existing rifle hunt now, or the proposed muzzleloader?
The proposed management.
The proposed ones have their seasons are, they cover weekends.
Okay, I misspoke in the existing.
Yeah, so the existing one is a rifle hunt that's only 5 days.
Yeah, it's only 5 days.
Yeah.
The existing is the per. How do I want
to? Their proposal would be to add hunts in the muzzleloader and in the archery.
Like they'd overlap the back half or the back two-thirds or whatever.
Right. How do I want to word that?
Just add some days to the existing one.
Yeah.
You had it.
Just add 2 days to the existing one is going to, that's how I want to do that.
But I guess my question would be, what with the DWR's proposal, what is the, are you not liking that, or what's your thoughts on why to not go with that?
Well, just to stretch that out a little bit, because the I'm agreeing with Todd.
Yeah.
Maybe Todd should make the motion.
I like where you're going with it here. But
not wording it right.
Make a motion.
Okay, so let me take a stab at it, Kent, and you see how close I get to what you're thinking here. So we would propose to lengthen the current rifle management buck deer hunt on the Henry Mountains by 2 days, either front or back, to include the weekend.
That's right.
And then what do you want to do with their proposal as far as the archery and the muzzleloader that overlap the current limited entry seasons?
Let them fight it out with the road and see who gets to go in. Sorry.
I want Charlie on my side.
No kidding. I'll take Charlie and Darrell on my side.
He's over this side. Being archery and muzzleloader, they're probably not going to have a big of effect.
That may not.
They're just regular archery and muzzleloader. No, but they're the back ends of them.
What overlap are we going to get with 2 days on that? Which other hunts are we going to screw up by putting 2 days on it?
You started on the front end. You're overlapping with the rifle. Buck deer, the rifle buck deer.
Okay.
You added on the back end. You're overlapping the opener of your first bison hunt. And one thing I didn't do a good job of it was explain. We go through these recommendations fairly quickly. One thing I didn't explain was why we recommended what we recommended for the archery and muzzleloader. With the archery hunt, it would be starting 7 days after
the limited entry or the premium limited entry archery hunt normally would. And as we looked at the data, the average archery hunter is spending 5.8 days in the field. And so a lot of these, I mean, there's only nine to begin with. On average, they're spending less than 6 days, and a lot of that harvest is occurring within that first week. Now, that's not to say that harvest doesn't occur throughout, because it does, but those are the data. And then on the muzzleloader, the average number of hunters is spending 2.6 days. And so by offsetting these hunts and allowing the management hunters to come in afterwards with these average number of hunters and only having nine public draw hunters in each, the archery and the muzzleloader, that was the why behind our recommendation. So I don't know if that helps or not.
So the hard part when you have something good, everyone wants to make sure that they keep it good. But I think the division's put a lot of thought in this to spread hunters out, but be able to still have they need to lower the buck numbers on the unit, and I see why they're doing what they're doing. We're waiting for a proposal on the management buck hunt on the Henrys.
I didn't look ahead at that when I was looking at that. I didn't factor in the buffalo hunt starting, and I'm pretty sure buffalo hunters are not going to appreciate deer hunters up there shooting the mountain up. I know I wouldn't.
Hard to please everybody.
It is.
In my opinion, the management buck hunt doesn't have a weekend. It's too bad, but yeah, they know it up front. If they don't want to put in for it, they don't have to put in for it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to withdraw my motion on that.
But it's just the point of the management hunt is to kill bucks. And so I think you'd increase that if you added a weekend. That's the whole point of it. We can't increase the hunters because then it's too many. And, you know,
Do we have less than 100% success on the management hunt?
It's about 90%.
90?
Yeah. It's dropped down to that. It's been about 90, it was 97 for several years. It's down to 93, 91%.
Is that because they can't find a big enough management buck, or they just can't find a management buck?
Just kidding.
Probably a little bit of both, actually. There's bucks there, but towards the end, it's hard to find one that is a legal management buck.
Well, I make a motion, since we can't really decide what to do, just to go with the recommendations that the divisions suggested and go that way. And I'm sorry you can't hunt on Saturday and Sunday. It breaks my heart. But.
So we got a motion by Charlie Tracy to accept the DWR's proposal. Do we have a second?
Now, is that the whole proposal?
Yeah.
Or just the management bus?
So what? Should
we just leave that? Because it'll be part of the other.
What's it? No, yeah. So this is to accept the DWR proposal with the Henry's management hunt, correct?
Right.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Unless I misunderstood, that's what I was.
That's what we're talking about.
Yes.
The Henry management hunt.
Yes.
Yeah, I second that.
Okay. Seconded by Daryl Meekum. Any discussion? All in favor? Okay. Opposed. One, Todd Huntington.
Maybe we could make a motion to get 30 more days in October.
How much power does the division have?
Then we can fit some hunts in. Other than that,
how about discussion on the limited entry Boulder Caparowitz muzzleloader?
I make a motion that we leave that in.
I'll second it.
So a motion by Todd Huntington to have the limited entry Boulder muzzleloader hunt the same as it was in 2016. Yes. Do we have a second?
Sure.
I thought Ken already did.
I thought he did.
Okay. Yeah. Ken, second by Kent. Any discussion?
Just a clarification that the dates will change to the 2017 dates, not... I mean, when you said as in 2016, the dates are going to move a day or two.
The dates would be appropriate with the changes that they'll make. All in favor? Unanimous. We have discussion on the archery proposals.
I would recommend that we do not accept the division's recommendations to add 7 days to the end of a once in a lifetime. Huh? That's my proposal.
Is that a motion?
I would say that's a motion. Sure.
Okay. So we've got a motion by Tricia to not accept the division's recommendation for the 7 day extension on the archery proposal. Do we have a second?
I'm okay with staying by myself.
Okay, that's all right. Motion fails, lack of second. Other discussion?
I make a motion that we accept the DWR's proposal on that.
On the 7 day extension?
Yeah.
We got a motion by Charlie Tracy to accept the 7 day extension by to the archery season. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Okay. Seconded by Daryl Meekum. Discussion on the motion? All in favor? Okay. Five. Opposed? Two opposed. Three opposed. Sue, Todd, and Tricia. Motion passes. Okay, was there any other separate items, or do we want to take the rest as a lump?
The only other second item that I think is something that I received a letter about was this overlap of limited entry bull with spike season on the Central Mountains. And I would propose that we do not accept that recommendation.
Say that again.
The overlap of a limited entry bull and spikes on the Central Mountains. Okay. I would recommend that we do not accept that proposal.
Okay. So that's happening on several units now. And so my question would be, you just feel that different than those units, that this one shouldn't have that, or?
I received a few letters that stated they didn't want that, they did not accept that, so. Okay.
What is the overlap, and can Justin?
Yeah, can you talk about the success of that hunt and what it was this year?
Have you had feedback on it, Todd?
On the overlap, I can't imagine they would. Well,
I just wondered if you've been here.
I haven't. No.
Yeah. So we haven't done our harvest surveys for it yet. It just recently ended this last month. So I don't have success rates. We don't have some of that feedback from the hunter harvest survey. So it's probably a little bit early to tell on that. The purpose of that hunt was when we redid the statewide elk plan. A lot of discussion about how the rifle elk hunts are the most sought after, point creep and those types of things. And so it was a way, instead of shifting more permits outside of rifle hunts, you'd put that hunt in a less desirable time. But you would overlap it with spike hunters, you'd overlap it with cow hunters. We would be very transparent in explaining that these dates are going to overlap. And so on the application time, that's what it is. But a lot of hunters were, a lot of the idea behind it was, well, what if I'm only accumulating elk points because I'm waiting for my deer or something like that, and I just want to try with fewer points? I'm not saying you'd get it with two, but it was a way to draw it with a rifle and have crummier conditions. Crummy's not a great word, but worse conditions,
right. Okay.
And still use a rifle. So
I think one of the discussions in that management hunt is, you know, a lot of these youth are starting applying now, and if they wanted to hunt,
you know, they couldn't compete with people with 20 points, but they would be able to hunt during those days. Yeah, the days aren't the greatest. They're competing with the spike hunters. But it does give those youth an opportunity that are starting now to at least be able to maybe hunt with lesser points on a few of those units. Yes.
And we predict success rates are going to be lower. We predict we'd kill younger age class bulls on that hunt.
So. Okay.
Justin, by killing younger age class bulls, aren't you robbing the future mature, bigger bulls? I mean, yeah, they've made it through the spike and are protected and supposedly grow up to be the big bull that the September hunt,
yeah,
limited entry guys want. So if you harvest, do we have a surplus of medium-sized bulls that aren't surviving to older age class, or are they staying growing up to be big bulls?
Yeah, I guess maybe I would add a question that maybe a better question is, what was the criteria for those units selected that those were on? And didn't it have to be over a certain amount of bulls in those units? Or
no, it didn't have any criteria like that. One of the criteria was, the reason this came about was, what do you do with units like the Wasatch, where we have 800 and some odd public draw permits? And a lot of these rifle hunters are either put into the early or late hunts. And so this last year, the Wildlife Board, even though our average age was 6.6 and we're managing for a 5.5 to 6-year-old bull, these rifle hunters were saying there were rifle hunters everywhere. And so where can we put this season and spread some of these hunters out and some of that stuff? So by design, it is to spread out those hunters, add tags where we can. And in some of these areas, we probably need that age objective lowered in areas like the Wasatch. So, And as we come forward with permits, if there's too many or not enough or whatever we need to do on that with the permits in that mid-season hunt, I'm sure that'll generate a lot of discussion as well, how many should really be there. So, does that help, Darris? I'm not sure if I answered your question really well, but
So people know up front what quality bull they're probably expecting to see and what there'll be other spike hunters out at the same time. So it's not like, gee, I got robbed of all my bonus points because I put in for this stupid hunt.
No, and Lindy, do you remember, do we make them check a box on that hunt? Yeah, so there is a box that hunters have to check that say, you know, please recognize that there will be general season spike and cow elk hunters occurring during this hunt. So we're pretty upfront.
Yeah. Has there been any reports of party hunting? Somebody in a group had a mature bull tag in the spike hunting camp?
No, so we asked around because this year we tried it on the Fish Lake. We tried it on the Ponsagon, some of those other units. And we got feedback from the law enforcement in the southern region. And they had issues where somebody harvested a mature bull, but they had the permit, and they didn't get calls. And so it was, well, is the concern, are we going to miss out on calls? And then things like that. But it wasn't, they didn't have the issues that we thought we may have. It was a pretty light year on our spike in any bull hunts anyways in a lot of parts of the state, so, which was good news enforcement-wise. So. Okay.
Can I make a comment on that? With the archery hunters wanting more opportunities, why can't we put some of those tags during the spike archery hunt? Let some people hunt the mature bulls. That'd spread hunters out even more, and it wouldn't. That might be an.
Can I take a stab at that? In the statewide plan, if you have 100 permits, 25 of those permits go to archery hunters, 15% go to muzzleloader, and the other 60 go to rifle hunters. And so what we're talking about is spreading out those 60 rifle permits on either an early, a late, and in this case, if it's approved, a mid. So it's just changing the distribution of those rifle hunts. So.
Thanks for that clarification, Justin.
I retract my comment.
Okay. We had some good discussion on that. I think we've got some better understanding. Entertain a motion on that. Or do you want to keep that in the... We'll just keep it right along with... Okay. So just need to talk about the, have a proposal to, for the remainder of the proposal.
So moved.
Okay. So we've got a proposed motion by Kent Johnson to pass the remainder of the DWR's proposal. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Seconded by Darris Jones. Discussion on the motion? All in favor? Unanimous. Preference point system amendment.
Sorry, I have to bring my phone with me. I'm on call for the Sportsman's Draw. It closes tonight. So if you guys want your application for the Sportsman's, it ends tonight.
I don't mind tonight. I can just text him.
Okay, thank you. My name is Lindy Varney. I am the Wildlife Licensing Specialist out of the Salt Lake office, and I'm here to present an amendment to our preference point system for our general season buck deer. In April, the Wildlife Board asked the division to review the way the preference point drawing for our general season buck deer is administered. The main concern is if you draw a deer permit on your second through fifth choice, you still get your preference points. I just want to point out that this is a social issue. This is not a resource issue. I want to give you the definition of what a preference point is. A preference point works the best when there are a sufficient number of permits to allow all applicants to be successful every few years. This creates certainty that you will draw your preferred unit, your preferred permit every few years. A little bit of history on our preference points. Preference points began in the year 2000. At that time, a point was earned if you were unsuccessful for any hunt choice, and you lost your points if you were successful on any hunt choice. This process was changed in 2009. You earned a point if you were unsuccessful for your first choice only, and you didn't lose your points if you drew out on your second through fifth choice. The reason for this change was to help reduce the number of remaining permits, remove the potential of our computer sales system crashing, and ensure that over-the-counter sales days had less of an impact on our public and on our system. So I just want to explain to you actually how our preference point system works for our general season buck deer. There are four parts to the structure. First is our lifetime permits. Our lifetime license holders get a general season deer permit every year if they desire. So the first thing is we straight off remove that quota, those permits off the quota. Next is our dedicated hunter applications. We evaluate those. Once those are evaluated, we move to our youth applications. Just a side note that we do give 20% of the quota to our youth. And if they don't draw out in this round, those applicants actually get put into the fourth category. So youth do actually go through the drawing twice. And so the last part is all the remaining applications that haven't been evaluated. So if you look at this graph here, here's our current draw structure. As you can see, is that we evaluate the highest preference point applicants first, and we look at all their hunt choices. We look at their first through fifth first before we move down to the next preference point range. So for example, if I have 4 points and the RAC chairman has 3 points, all of my hunt choices will be evaluated before his, even if my third choice is his first choice. Also in the current draw structure, you keep your preference points if you draw on your second through fifth choice. So this graph shows you the comparison of how the last 5 years have played out. It shows our applicants that drew their first choice compared to applicants that drew their second through fifth choice and our applicants that were unsuccessful. So in 2012, you can see there's around 66 applicants that were successful for their first choice. Around 26,000 applicants were unsuccessful, and about 7,500 or 7% of the applicants drew their second through fifth choice. This year, in 2016, around 68,000 of our applicants drew their first choice. Around 44,000 of the applicants were unsuccessful, and about 10,600, or 8% of our applicants, drew their second through fifth choice. So, at the request of the Wildlife Board, the division is presenting an option to change the way their general season buck deer applications are evaluated. This process, if approved, will allow the division to evaluate everyone's first choice first, beginning with the applications with the greatest number of preference points. Then the division would evaluate everyone's second choice and so forth. Also, if you draw a general season buck deer permit, regardless of your hunt choice, you lose your preference points. So with this request, the division decided to run a mock drawing. So if you look at this graph here, this is, it explains exactly what the option that I just talked about shows on how we ran it. So what we did is we took the applicants, that had the greatest number of preference points, we evaluated their first choice first, then we went to the next preference point range and we evaluated just their first choice. And we went all the way down to all the applicants with 0 points. We did use this year's current data of all of our applicants that applied in our general season drawing for the current structure. So we just did it how they applied. So once we evaluated everyone's first choice, we then went to everyone's second choice. And then we started with the applicants that had the greatest number of preference points and worked our way down. And we did that with all the hunt choices. Here's the comparison of how our current drawing versus the mock drawing played out. I just want to point out that this is just for residents only in the state of Utah. As you can see, that the green line does represent our current drawing and the black line represents the mock drawing. In the mock drawing, you can see that there was about 3% of an increase of applicants that drew out on their first choice. It was about 3,000 applicants. And then on their second choice, it went down on the mock drawing. So about 2,700 of our applicants in the mock drawing didn't draw their second choice. And the third through fifth stayed about the same. And of course, our unsuccessful stayed the same and the ineligible stayed the same. And what ineligible means are the applicants that applied for either limited entry deer permit or dedicated hunter deer permit and they drew out. So then their applications for the general season were no longer eligible because they already had a deer permit. So I wanted to see who the extra 3% was. It kind of interested me to see what point category they were in. So this kind of shows you all of our applicants and their points of what they had. And as you can see, that 3,000 was our applicants that had 0 points. So in the mock drawing, more applicants with 0 points drew out their first choice. A little bit of applicants that had 1 point drew out in the mock drawing, and our applicants that had 2 through 11 points, it was about the same. I also was kind of curious about remaining permits, and there was only a 6-permit difference. So in the mock drawing, we did have 6 more remaining permits. Now that's if everyone applied the exact same way as they did this year. But I do want to tell you about a scenario that could potentially happen if everyone is, so if our applicants lose their points no matter what hunt choice, they may apply differently. You know, it's hard to predict how our hunters will apply. So I wanted to see what our worst case scenario would be on remaining permits. So if you look here, 7,886 would be our worst case scenario on remaining permits. And that's if no one applied for a second through fifth choice. The one thing that the division is requesting, that if the general season buck deer preference point system is changed, we would like to use the same approach that we do for all of our other preference point systems. And that, of course, is our general season buck deer, our antlerless draw, our crane, grouse, and swan drawings, just so we can stay consistent and not confuse the public. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the rack?
Is the cow moose a preference or a bonus point?
That's a bonus point, so that's the one that's not affected.
Okay. interesting to see you run the differences. I thought maybe it would have more of an effect than it did. It's interesting to see what that change was on the first choice, but it wasn't as big as what I thought it may.
Yeah, that's kind of shocked me too. And so that's why I was kind of wondering who it was.
Yeah. Questions from the audience? Comments from the audience? Eric Luke.
Eric Luke, representing Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. It's all right with you, Mr. Chairman. I like to save us all a lot of time and just state that Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife, on the remaining item, agenda items, we support the division's recommendations.
Okay.
What are you trying to do? Go home?
He wants to excuse himself, doesn't he?
Can we do that too? Mr. Chairman? Kevin, can we do that too?
Yeah. You can make that in a motion.
I move that Eric has to stay to the very end.
Are you kidding? Oh, we can't vote on that.
Yeah.
No, I was just going to say, any other questions from the audience? Okay. Comments from the RAC? Entertain a motion.
Motion to approve the division's proposal.
Okay. Motion to approve number 7, preference point system amendment by Kent Johnson, seconded by Charlie Tracy.
I second.
All in favor? Unanimous. Item number 8.
Appreciate your time tonight. I'm Randall Thacker from the Northeastern region. I'm the Assistant Wildlife Manager in the Northeast region. Once a year, we come around to each the racks and update our deer management plans in one of the regions in the state. That's set up on a rotating basis based on where the range trend, which is our habitat monitoring crew, where they go around each year and they read the habitat. When I say read, they go take all the measurements and collect data at each of the habitat range trend habitat monitoring sites across the state, and they'll do one region at a time. And so they came in 2015 and read all those sites in our region, and so this is in the year after that we update our plans, and based on that habitat data that was there, we'll go through and look at our deer unit management plans and update those plans. And so these are the units that are based primarily in the Northeast region. There are a couple of units in that you will be interested in, I think, in this. The 9 Mile Range Creek unit is included, as you, if you look through that, and also the book list. The other units are not in your region. The other RACs haven't been too interested when they're not in their region, so I'm going to go quickly through those. If you'd like more information, raise your hand or something. I'd be happy to pause and give you more information as we go through. Otherwise, I'll kind of go through quickly on those. So we'll begin first here tonight with one that you will have some interest in. This is the 9 Mile unit. Each of these units essentially have population objectives that are divided up between the two different wintering areas. And so on this slide, as you look at the red dotted line across the top, that shows the population objective for the 9 Mile Range Creek portion. That's the portion that you'd be interested here in your region. The objective is 6,000. Our current population estimate is indicated by that solid red line with the black dots. Then you can see right now our current population estimate of post-season 2015 would have been 5,100 last year. So the blue dotted line down lower, it shows the population objective for the range, the 9 Mile anthro portion, which is the portion would be in the northeastern region, with the objective of 2,500, currently at about 1,700. This slide is just a real quick summary for us here to show you on the 9 Mile unit. The range trend on these units, all of those habitat monitoring sites show that the range is either stable or is actually increasing on this unit and doing fairly well. We have very, very limited depredation concerns on this unit in either of the subunits. When they are there, they're dealt with through depredation permits and the existing programs that are already out there. So you can look here at the current estimates, the current old population objectives. We're recommending no changes for the population objective on this unit. The next unit I think you'll have some interest in here too is the Bookcliffs population over here. Again, it has two kind of a subpopulation objectives. The blue dot line across the top is the North Bookcliffs. That's 10 A and C, and that has a population objective of 10,000 deer. You can see the blue line there, that solid blue line that indicates the population trend out there of 5,200 at this time. The red line, dotted line across there, again being the objective for the South Bookcliffs. Here in your region, a population objective of 5,000, we're basically 2,500 right now. You combine these, you look at them separately, either way, it's basically around just a little over around 50% of objective on this unit. Looking at the range conditions and the range trend on the Bookcliffs, again, they read them both the same time. The Bookcliffs North is actually, everything is either stable or an increasing trend and actually improving up there. The south shows there are a couple of habitat quality issues at a couple of units. Essentially, it really boils down to one unit going from in good condition down to fair condition. There is a shift in one of the monitoring sites out there down slightly, I guess, that way, but it's a very slight reduction. All the other sites look like they're stable and doing well or increasing, and so it's actually in fairly decent condition. Given the weather patterns we've had the last several years out there, it's been quite dry with the drought. The depredation considerations, again, on the Bookcliffs, both north and south, for deer, it's fairly minimal, just a few localized areas, and those are addressed through existing processes. There is the issue, as identified on the Bookcliffs. It is one of the units in the state that has a very high predator density compared to other units. It is a predator-rich environment out there. That is there. It's just recognized in the plan. This unit is in predator management for cougar and for coyotes, and so a little extra effort is put into being able to target some of the coyotes and those on this unit and those kind of things. And so that's there. Population objective-wise, as I said, we're only 52% of the overall objective here on between the two. We're recommending no change here. That we would like to see that population increase before anything was looked at on that. So. The south slope, this is the south slope of the Uintas. This unit has two subunits, again, two kind of an east and west instead of a north-south. This one, both the objectives, our existing objectives have been 13,000 deer in both subunits. That's the one line there with the dotted lines there. The red line shows the population estimate for the south slope vernal diamond and bonanza subpopulation, which is kind of the east half, and the blue line indicates the south slope Yellowstone, which is the west portion of the unit. To summarize on the south slope, the range trend, it indicates that almost all the sites are stable. We did have a couple of sites on the east end over there that did decline in trend. They've been declining. Those same sites have been declining for several years since the 1993, actually, when we had a large drought-related sagebrush die-off. And those sites were actually converted almost completely over to cheatgrass and annual weeds. And so those sites are not declining due to deer overutilization or anything like that, but they have definitely changed and decreased in value. And so we've identified some of those areas and as things to focus our the watershed initiative projects and habitat restoration work in the future to target some of these areas to try to address some of the annual grasses and those kind of problems that we're seeing in those. In spite of the loss of some of those sites, that some of those are actually declining because of the cheatgrass takeover in some of those sites, What's interesting is we do, you're all familiar with the radio collaring that we do on deer each year, where we actually do the survival monitoring of deer, and we catch deer across the state now, you know, in the five representative units, one for each region. This is the unit that we have in the Northeast region where the deer are captured and body condition measurements are taken on the deer. They actually ultrasound the deer to come up with the amounts of body fat and some different measurements on the body to come up with how healthy the deer are. And these deer continue to be some of the healthiest ones in the state. They have some of the best body condition scores anyway in the state. And so we feel comfortable that this population is doing well. It's not a habitat degradation issue or anything that way that's going on. I'll jump to the bottom down there. We do recommend one change, a slight change on the vernal portion over there on the east portion of the south slope, is to increase the objective from 13,000 up to 15,000 deer on this unit. So, Wasatch Mountains East, this represents the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek and the Wasatch Mountain Aviniquin subunits. The blue lines at the top showing the objective of 15,000 deer, the blue population trend you can see there. The last four and really five winters up there, we finally had some really good winters on this unit where these deer winter, and you can see the resulting population increase there. We've had great survival rates and very productive years over there, and we've actually exceeded the old population objective on that. The yellow red lines being the Wasatch Mountains of Aviniquin. And that represents, you can see that population has now hit the population objective and is essentially in there and doing quite well. So to summarize on the Wasatch East, the range trend, all the range trend sites there were either stable or increasing in trend, they're improving. We've had a huge amount of habitat improvement that's been done on this unit, on these units, particularly the Wasatch Mountains Current Creek, where most of these deer are wintering. We do have a large amount of state Division of Wildlife Resources land there that's there, and then 7,000 acres of chainings and bull hog treatments and other tight lop and scatter treatments that have really improved our winter ranges and increased our carrying capacity there too. We do have depredation concerns on that unit. We do have private land areas that do have some issues, but those are all fully dealt with for deer through our mitigation permits and various type of mitigation plans, so not really a problem on that in that case. We are recommending population objective increases on both these subunits from 15,000 on the Current Creek up to 20,000, and then from 3,500 up to 5,000 on the Wasatch Mountains East. And lastly, we have the north slope of the Uintah. This unit just has one objective. It's pool. There is two subunits, but we pool the objective for deer here. It's just one, treated as one objective. This population, you can see, has done very well, too. It's very much exceeded the population objective of 6,200 deer there. It's had five great year winters in a row, too. Great winter survival, great production, good come up there. They've actually had a pretty good cycle of rain, summer rains that have been really productive for them, too. So this population's been doing very well. To summarize the range trend on this unit, the range conditions are stable or increasing. They're all doing really well. We're actually seeing decreased utilization on some of the browse species and stuff there. It seems to be doing quite well right now. Very few depredation issues that are serious. We do have a unique situation on this one that's dealt with in the plan. I don't know if you're familiar with the town of Manila. It's not the biggest city in the state of Utah. Probably one of the smaller ones. They do have, though, 100 to 150 deer that have set up residence in and around town, and as you can imagine, half the people there love them and half of them hate them. What we stated in the plan is that when the city council and the mayor decide if they would like our help, we'll work with them to go in and address that problem. Other than that, we'll wait until they make that decision what we're going to do in city limits because of the restrictions on hunting and those kind of things. So we are recommending a population objective increase on this unit to bring it up closer to where it is at now at this time, which is to raise that objective up to 10,000 deer. And that's all. If you have any questions. Did I do it quick enough is the question.
Have you seen any kind of major changes in the Book Cliffs, heard with the paving of the Seat Bridge Road? I mean, any negative effects overall?
Good question. With the paving of the Seat Bridge Road, it is an issue, and we were very concerned about it, and we still are. We did do what was one good thing about it, I guess. We've been able to, we worked quite closely with Uintah County and worked with them to get a lot of underpasses put in. If you've been out there, there's some huge culverts were installed. We also have monitored those scents, put trail cameras on those, been painted, and we are getting real good use on those underpasses, which is the good news side. That's the real positive side of it. We did go out there and radio collar a number of deer, and it was, I believe it was 50 to begin with, and we've maintained those collars on there for a few years to look at, to see. We did it for the 2 years prior, and then during the actual, after the road was constructed. We did see an increase in roadkill along the corridor there. It wasn't as dramatic as what we expected it to be. We thought it might be worse, I guess. But the good news has been with the oil field drop-off the last 2 years up there, the traffic has significantly dropped off on that road. So in spite of the fact that it is now like a 65 to 70 mile an hour highway, it's one of the nicest ones in the state if you haven't driven it yet. As of yet, we aren't seeing the huge roadkill impact that we thought we might, and so we're kind of waiting until we start to see that traffic impact increase again out there, and it's identified in the plan. We talked about that, mentioned in the plan. If needed, we'll go ahead and put some more, do some more studying out there. We'd like to have seen some more fencing there. Ideally, in a perfect world, it would have been better to do that, but the costs were so high, Uinta County was unwilling to work with us on you know, paying for that. And so for now, we'll have to just, we're trying to monitor those areas to see where the real bad spots will be and address that. But again, right now the traffic's dropped off significantly. It's very little traffic out there compared to what there used to be. So we'll wait and see how that impact occurs.
Thank you. Questions from the audience? Comments from the audience? Motions from the rack?
No, just a general comment. I just think, you know, looking into the future with the proposal of the Book Cliffs Corridor, where they're talking about running that road all the way up through Hay, then, well, not through Hay, but up through East, and then you know, coming into the Divide Road, that it's something that the division really needs to look at as far as really fracturing a limited entry unit. I think it's...
Which species or for...
For all, well, deer and elk predominantly, but, you know, I think it's really something to be... It's all hunters, bear hunters, lion hunters. I mean, I think it's something that's... You really need to look at and hopefully come up with some kind of recommendation when that comes up, because I do think it's going to come up, especially with the incoming administration, both at our county level at Grand County, but also higher up. So it's just something the division, I really think, needs to look at. I think it'd be quite devastating to that unit.
Any other comments?
Ready for a motion, Kevin? Make a motion that we accept that stuff.
Okay. I second.
I couldn't even beat you to that. Motion by Charlie Tracy to accept the item number 8, deer management plan, seconded by Daryl Meekum. All in favor? Unanimous.
Number 9. Okay, I'm Kobe Jones. I'm here to present the 2017 CWMU Buck and Bull recommendations.
Hey, you forgot the railroad that's going to go through there, too.
Okay, so we'll break this down. In 2017, we break it down to new applications, renewal applications, and change applications. There's a couple reasons for change applications. Change in voucher or permit allocation, change in season dates, or change in acreage. So this year we received 9 applications for new CWMUs. One is because Black Point and Missouri Flats dissolved and became one CWMU, and then 8 new applications. 13 CWMUs submitted renewal applications, and 9 submitted change applications for a total of 31 that we reviewed. So just a quick statewide overlook here. There are 132 CWMUs in the state now. The majority of those are still obviously in the northern region, where the majority of the private property is. For about 2.3 million acres, and 97% of that is private land. a quick look at the voucher distribution and permit distribution. 3,000 vouchers going to private landowners for Bucks and Bulls, and 500. I think the important thing here is that there are 503 guys that are getting access to private lands without a trespass fee, just for the price of the permit and an ability to hunt land they would otherwise not be able to hunt. And even though it's not antlerless, just a quick look at that, because the majority of those permits for opportunity go back to the public for a 322 to the private landowner, over 1,200 to the public there. So we'll break this down by region. Starting in the northern region, new applications, we had Cedar Springs, Mecum Ridge, Royal Ivory Outfitters, and Snowville Flat for new pronghorn deer and moose, Cedar Muse. Reviewing those, we recommend approval of all of them. Northern region renewal applications. One of the important things to note here is that there's some areas in the northern region that are hard to manage to our elk objectives. And we've worked hard with these Cedar Muse where we're over objective to increase their antlerless permits. And several of the Cedar Muse in there are doing that. Mountaintop, Hardscrabble, they're all willing to increase their antlerless permits and try to get more harvest to help manage the objective there. We appreciate that. And then the change applications in the northern region. Deseret dropped off by 13,000 acres. They had a portion of the Cedar Muse that really didn't make sense. It was a hard boundary, not hard to define, and it made sense to exclude the property. And then we just reduced permits and vouchers accordingly. Double Cone has some private land inside their Cedar Muse, so they added 3,000 acres of trade lands, and that adjusted the voucher distribution. George Creek, they put in some antlerless deer vouchers to handle depredation, and they're handling that okay, and they asked to reduce those, and we agreed with that. Ingham Peak are starting to have some moose show up, and they added bull moose. We agree with that. And then North Peaks, which was previously Twin Peaks, increased elk vouchers and decreased deer vouchers, and that also made sense. So, southeastern region renewal applications. Minimod is requesting 10 additional deer vouchers, and then Red Ranch is renewed as well here, and there were no changes. The change applications for the southeastern region, Hiawatha added some acreage, and that qualified them for one more elk voucher. Indian Head changed their deer season to the later season, and Schofield Canyons requested additional two bull elk vouchers, which made it was equitable among the surrounding Cedar Muse in the area, and we recommend approval there as well. This is the Pavon Enzyme Ranch that just incorporated the Black Point, Missouri flat. So now that'll all be one Cedar Muse for deer, elk, turkey, and pronghorn in the southern region. In the central region, we have Allen Ranch that went away for a year. It was a pronghorn Cedar Muse, and they reapplied. Recommend approval there. And then Deer Creek, you'll see the asterisks there. You know, one of the really important things about this program is access for the public hunter and their experience. And that, frankly, that wasn't happening on Deer Creek. The last COR, they went zero for six on harvest for the public hunter there. We've really worked with this operator, made it clear that this is kind of the last chance, last ditch effort. So this year, this approval didn't come without some other stipulations that we sent to him in a letter, that there will be hunter satisfaction. And that he'll work hard to help those guys be successful. And if that doesn't happen, you'll probably see us back asking to withdraw the COR. Rock House is a new deer Cedar Muse in the central region as well. And then Bear Mountain, they asked for an additional three deer vouchers, and we recommend approval there too. Cottonwood Ridge is a new pronghorn Cedar Muse in the northeastern region. We're excited about. We hope it'll help address some depredation issues and make those animals more valuable to the private landowners in that area. And that's all.
Questions?
I always have to bring this up, but if If one of these CWMUs has an infraction, a citation, and they go up for renewal, I mean, does the division take that into account? And I'll be specific about it. They're guiding hunters and they're trespassing onto public lands, for example. I mean, it's difficult when I see this and I see the division continuing to renew these CWMUs. I feel like.
So is this a specific example then mm-hmm. you're referring to?
Do you want me to tell you the the Red Ranches specifically? And this was probably beyond a few years ago now, but you know, they repeatedly have issues with trespassing onto public lands with their allotments, and yet we continue to renew their CWMU. And I guess I just want to know what the process is like. I mean, are those all taken into account, all of these issues taken into account? Because you said you were just talking about hunter satisfaction. I mean, do we take into account all issues when renewing those?
So help me understand the question then. Do we take into account livestock trespass on public ground when we renew?
This isn't livestock. This is,
okay.
They're given deer and elk tags, depredation tags, correct?
Okay, yeah.
And then they're taking their hunters onto public lands to hunt those deer and elk.
Yeah.
And they're cited for that, and yet we continue to give them deer and elk depredation tags.
You know, I'm not familiar with that incident, I guess.
And I understand. Yeah, mm-hmm. It was a few years old. I'm just wondering if infractions like that are taken into account when
absolutely.
We're looking at applications.
Yeah, absolutely. When we review one of these, there's checks and balances from the biologist to the regional supervisor and law enforcement as well. Okay. And if there are infractions in rule,
right.
You know, it states that we have the ability to pull the COR there. So, yes.
Okay.
Any other question?
In fact, we have done that.
You have?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good to know.
Crab Creek is a perfect example of that.
Okay.
You know, so.
That's good to know.
Questions from the audience? Comments from the audience? Comments from the rack?
I'd like to make a motion that we accept the item number 9 as it was presented.
I second that.
We're getting good. Yeah. Motion by Charlie Tracy to accept CWMU management plans, seconded by Daryl Meekum. All in favor? Unanimous. Number 10?
Number 10. Okay, so we'll go through the 2017 Landowner Association voucher recommendations. So there are, breaking it out, there are 12 landowner associations that are still under the 3-year COR. They'll have no changes. They're already approved for hunting in the 2017 season. There's one new landowner association, 4 landowner associations requesting changes, and 1 correction. So that makes a total of 17 landowner associations across the state and limited entry units. And that equals 126 deer vouchers, 78 elk vouchers, and 9 pronghorn vouchers. So Diamond Mountain, we had an increase in public permits there because buck-to-doe ratios were higher. That allowed them to qualify for 4 additional vouchers, and we recommend approval there. Oak Creek added acreage, and so they moved from 6 to 7. They qualify for 7 now. Pavant Mountain, an elk landowner association, they also increased acreage, which moved them from 5 to 6. Pilot Mountain, that's wrong. It's not an acreage increase. They actually increased permits there when we changed the age objective on the unit. And before they qualified for 1 every 3 years, now they qualify for 2 vouchers every 3 years. And then Bookless Pronghorn should have been presented as 3, it was presented as 2, and we'd like to make that correction now. The Henry Mountains LOA reapplied this year, and they qualify for 1 deer every 3 years, and we're recommending that they qualify for 1 every 3 years as per rule. Thanks.
On landowner associations, they're required to enroll over 50% of the private land, is that correct?
It's 51% is what how the rule reads right now.
How many total private or eligible acres are there on the land? What percent is 6,000 acres?
So the way the rule's written, it's of the deer habitat in the unit, and so it's about 62% of the private land within the. Yeah.
How many different landowners
involved in that? We've got Brad here that can probably answer that better than I could.
You get to take them.
They're all laying out.
Brad, how many private landowners are enrolled in the Henry Mountains Landowner Association?
For five, I think. It's not a lot.
More than just the Sandy Ranch, so.
Oh, yeah.
There's more than just the Sandy Ranch, but they're the majority of the land.
Okay. How does this differ from what they've had in the past with the tag that they did have?
It doesn't. This is right in line with what it's been in the past, one every 3 years.
Any other questions from the RAC? Questions from the audience? Comments? Motions from the RAC?
Make a motion to accept.
I didn't get to read it this
time. He's second.
Motion by Charlie Tracy to accept number 10, Landowner Association Permit Numbers, seconded by Daryl Meekum. All in favor? Unanimous. Adjourned. Yeah.